Welcome to Tosfos Markings. Today's shiur is Bofa Basra Daf Chof Hey. We will be beginning at the top line, at the Mishnah. You will see a topic heading on the side called the Nosei, which reads Harchokas Reach Ra Min O'ir. The requirement of distancing a source of bad odor from a city. The Mishnah. Marchiken es hanavelus vesakvoros vesabusiki minoir. One is to distance nevelos, are dead animals, kvoros, graves, bursiki, tanneries. And they must be kept at a minimum distance of chamishim amo, 15 amos from the city. Enos and bursiki, elo lemizro choir. Rashi says on the second line from the top, elo lemizro choir. The bursiki is to be made only on the eastern side of the city. She'ein haruach mizrachis koshet todir elim kein ba'al l'puranis. The eastern wind is a calm wind unless it's being brought as a source of retribution. Aval kedarka hi chamu min hasheves benachas. But under normal circumstances, it blows in a calm fashion, dechtiv ruach kodim chareishis v'toch hashemesh. From the Novi Yoino, you see that it's described as a ruach chareishis, a mute, calm type wind. Lefikach eino mevia ruach lir. Because of this calm aspect, it won't blow into the city the bad odor. So if you place the bursiki on the eastern side of the city, winds coming in from there won't blow into the city the bad odor. Rabbi Akiva Oimer Lechol Ruach Hu Oise Chutz Mi Ma'arova Umarchik Chamishim Amo. Rabbi Akiva has a more lenient approach to positioning of the bursiki. All sides are acceptable, all directions are acceptable except for the western side. He adds this point of distancing 50 amos. It's not 100% clear what that is going on. The Gemara will explain. Umarchikin es hamashrim in hayerek. This is a part of the Mishnah that was dealt with extensively earlier in our Masechta. But here's the Mishnah at its source. The need to distance various sources of damage from various victims. So you're to keep the mashre. Mashre is a pool in which flax soak till they become ready for processing, ultimately into linens. So the mashra is to be kept at a distance from yerek, from vegetables. Ves akreshim min habtzolim. Kreshim, a type of vegetable, is to be kept at a distance from bitzolim, often translated as onions. Ves achardol min advorim. Chardol, another kind of plant, often translated as mustard, is to be kept at a distance from bees. Rabbi Yossi matir b'chardol. Rabbi Yossi does not require the person developing or cultivating chardol to maintain a distance from the bees. Once again, that's a point that we've discussed extensively in the past. Today's Gemara will touch on it, but not in any thorough fashion. On the side of the Gemara, we have an Osei topic heading, and it reads, Birur Maushitas Rabbi Akiva. As we were reading the Mishnah, we paused and pointed out that Rabbi Akiva's point of view needs clarification. So here the Gemara presents the question in an Aleph O Dilma Beis fashion. Ibayalaho, Rabbi Akiva Hechi Komar, how is he to be understood? L'chol ruach lo'esev esoymech chutz mi marova demarchik chamishim amav oiseh. Is he telling us that you can set up the tannery in all directions of the city, right up along the border of the city, with the exception of the western side, where you can also set up a tannery, but there you must keep it at a distance of 50 amos, a dilma, or maybe the understanding of Rabbi Akiva as follows. L'chol ruach lo'iseh, umarchi chamishim amo. One is allowed to set up a tannery in any of the directions, three of the four directions of the city, provided you maintain a distance of 50 amos. Chutz mi ma'arova de'en oiseh klal. With the exception of the western side, where you are not to position a tannery whatsoever. So, in order to answer this, we continue Toshma Disanya. We'll see a source like the Bay's possibility. Here we have a brisa that spells things out more than the Mishnah. Rabbi Kiva, l'chol ruachu eiseh u'marchi chamishim amo. One can set up a tannery in the north, east, or south of the city, provided you maintain a distance of 50 amos. Chutz mimarov de'nosukol ikum neshehi tadira. With the exception of the western side, there no provision is made for setting up a tannery, because it is tadira. Omale rava l'rav Nachman, my tadira. What do you mean by that expression? Now, you'll notice that we have a long question marking. Then you'll also notice the use of a double line. And this is explained on the side under the Mivneh, the structural note. Shlavim, these are stages. The double underline highlights stages. But biur mahu chutz marava mevneshi tadira. What does the tadira expression mean? So, we continue in our quest for understanding what does tadira mean. In lema tadira baruchos, namely that the western wind blows in a more regular, constant fashion than the other winds. Well, the Gemara rejects that. V'ho amarav chonon bar, abo amarav, ar baruchos menashis b'chol yoyim v'ruach tzfaynis im kulam. The four winds blow each day, and it's the north wind that blows along with each one of them. We take a look at the Rashi in the upper part of the page, in the upper part of the narrow lines. He says, Tadira Baruchos, Oisei Tzad, that side, the northern side, Tadir Baruch She, Ruach Marovis Minasheves, Tadir Misha Baruchos, this was the assumption, that maybe it means it's a wind that blows in a more, the western wind blows in a more regular fashion. Rashi continues, Ruach Tzfeinus Minasheves in Kol Achas Meruchos. It's the northern wind that blows with, along with all the other winds. Lefi Shehi, Rako, Mesuka, Utslula, it's a soft, sweet, clear wind. Kedomar B'Yavomis, Umemaskis on it, sweetens the others. So it's desirable to have the northern wind blowing along with the other winds. We continue in the Gemara, Sheil Molekein, if not for that, Ein Ha'ilam is Kaim Afilu Shoachas, the world would not continue to exist even for an hour. V'ruach Dremis Kosh Mikulon, the southern wind is described as the most strenuous, difficult wind. V'moli Ben Neitz Shemamida, if not for Ben Neitz, it's a type of angel that looks like, resembles a bird called the Neitz. And if not for this angel, Shemamida, that holds it back, that protects against it, Machrevis Es Ha'olam, it would destroy the world. Shnemar, the Pasuk says, Ha mi binoscha Yaver Neitz Yifrois Kinofov L'Teimon. The reference in this pasuk is the angel that's called Neitz, Ben Neitz, that spreads out its wings toward the south, preventing the southerly wind from wreaking extensive damage. So what does the source above, which describes the western wind as Tadira, mean? What is Tadira? Ela mai Tadira? Tadira b'shchina. It's the place, it's the direction in which the Almighty concentrates His presence. These are concepts that are difficult to understand. They're descriptions of the Almighty and His workings, and when you get into that realm, we issue our disclaimer right at the outset that we're not even going to attempt to explain these things in any deeper fashion. We'll try to stick to the translation, recognizing that there's a much greater depth to these matters. the triangle that you see is explained on the side under the Mivneh marking, structure marking. We're going to see a number of different opinions regarding the location of the divine presence, and this has halacha lemaisa ramifications regarding which direction should you turn for davening. Many of you are probably familiar with we'll call it the popular approach, namely facing Jerusalem, facing the Beis Hamikdash. Recognize, though, that that's only one of several opinions. So we'll be exposed to other opinions on this matter. There's going to be another marking which highlights a particular point of view called the double underline marking highlights Shechina b'chol makom. The divine presence is in all directions. It's not concentrated in one spot. Now, divine presence is a concept that we'll try to say that it emanates from the Almighty, but it doesn't mean the Almighty. It's a function of where the Kodesh Baruch Hu concentrates a certain, we'll say, certain aspect of holiness, but far be it from us to say that it means the Almighty. Obviously, He is omnipresent. But we continue in the Gemara with the first approach. What does Tadiro mean? Tadiro b'shchina. The Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Bo v'nachzik toivu lavuseinu. Let us express our gratitude, our appreciation to our forebearers, the members of the Anshei Knesset HaGedola, who compiled the book of Nehemiah, showed the Unu Mokoim Tfila, that informed us, they informed us of where to direct ourselves when davening. Dechtiv Utsvo HaShomayim Lucho Mishtachavim. The Tsvo HaShomayim, the heavenly hosts, a reference to the sun, the moon, and other heavenly bodies. Let's focus on the sun for our purposes. The sun rises in the east. And it says in the pasuk l'cha mishtachavim, so it's position in the east. It's bowing. Then in what direction? It's bowing toward the west. So it must be. And it's saying they are bowing to you, to the Almighty. So that we can conclude from here, says Rav Shimon Levi, that Shekhinah is b'marav. And with that information, then since the divine presence is in the west, you don't want to put a bursiki over there. The Maskif law, Rav Acha Bar Yankiv, Rav Acha asks, V'dilma ke'eved shenoitel pras meiraboi v'choyzer l'achoyrov u'mishtachaveh. Maybe the heavenly bodies, the Tzva Hashemayim, the sun, is bowing toward the east. And namely that the divine presence is in the east, and the sun, we say, rises in the east and moves toward the west, as everyone knows. And and the bowing here then is described like a slave that receives a prize, pras, sounds like the word prize phonetically. So he received a prize from his master. The custom is that you receive the prize from the master when you're up close to the master, and you walk backwards in a bowing fashion, continuously distancing yourself from the master. Well, that would then suggest that really the divine presence is in the east, and the movement of the sun is as a slave receiving a prize from the master, the sun being one of the servants of the Almighty, backing away from him in a bowing fashion as an expression of gratitude. The Gemara says, well, Kashya, that would be a difficulty. In fact, if you're going to rely on the Pasuk in Nechem, Yitzvah Hashem, and L'chom Mishtachavim to prove that the divine presence is in the west, you run up against Rav Acha's question. And the Gemara leaves that as a difficulty. Rav Hoshaya Savar Shechinah B'chol Mokoyim. At this point, it would then appear that as far as what Tadira means in the Tanaic source above, It may very well mean the West, as Rabbi Shua ben Levi suggested, but the proof that he brought, that remains questionable. Rabbi Shaya, regarding Shechina location, b'chol mokom. Domer Rabbi Shaya, my dichtiv, atahu Hashem levadcho, atah sisa es hashamayim, v'chulei. Rashi, atahu Hashem levadcho, bosu utzvo hashamayim, ksiv. This pasuk follows the pasuk that we just referred to before. V'al iske shlichus tzvo hashamayim, hu mishabeach. And regarding the messenger aspect of the Tzvo HaShemayim, Shlichus, an emissary, a messenger, the Pasuk is praising that. V'yomer Atahu Levadecha, B'midozer, you are alone in the following characteristic, in the following attribute. And let's see what is the uniqueness of the Almighty with regard to His emissaries. The Gemara continues, Shluchecha lo kishluchei basar v'dam. Your emissaries are not like those of man. Shluchei basar v'dam, imokom she mishtalchim l'sham machzirin shlichusan. A mortal emissary, messenger, upon completion of his task, of his shlichus, he returns to the point from which he was sent. He returns to the sender. That's what mimokom shem mishtachin l'shom machzirin shlichusan. From the place that they were sent, they return to inform of their having completed the task. Avo shluchecha, but your emissaries, the pasuk appeals to the Almighty, lemokim shemishdachin sham machzirin shlichusan. They inform of their completion of task at the destination to which they were sent. In other words, who's the sender? The Almighty. Where is he? He's all over. He's not only at where the emissary was sent from, he's also where the emissary was sent to. The Rashi says, "Lemokim shemishdalchin pirush ba'oisamokim shenishdalchu sham afsham ashchina mitzuya." The divine presence is there too at the destination. And the emissary say, we fulfilled your mission, your task. We continue in the Gemara. Shenemar, ha sishalach brokim v'yelechu v'yomru l'cha hinenu. The pasuk describes the brokim, or flashes of lightning. They go and they say, here we are. In other words, we've done what we had to do. Yovo v'yomru lo nemar. It doesn't say they come and tell. Ela v'yelchu v'yomru. They go and tell. Not go and come back. You know, when it said yovo v'yomru means they would go and come back and tell that they did their task. It doesn't say that though. It says v'yelchu v'yomru. Lolaveh sh'ashchina v'chol mokom. This shows us that the Shechina is not only where the mission started, but where the mission was completed, and hence the Shechina is all over. The Afri b'Yishmael Sover Shechina b'chol mokom. The Tanur b'Yishmael, minayin sheshechina b'chol mokom, shenemar, from where do we know the Shechina is all over? The Pasuk says, hinei ha-malach ha-doiver bi yotzei, u-malach acher yotzei likrosoi. We take a look at the Rashi, before we continue in the source. Vihine hamalach adover bi yotzei benevuah Zechariah. This is in the prophecy by the prophet Zechariah. The angel referred to was sent lamud es Yerushalayim kama orka, to measure the dimensions of Jerusalem. Umalach acher yotzei listor shlichus shirishon shechazer ba'amokom militein ba'amida. A second angel was sent out to countermand the instructions received by the first Malach. First Malach was sent to measure Jerusalem. Second Malach was sent, forget it, stop measuring. Why? Because the Kodesh Baruch Hu has decided that I'm not establishing dimensions, distances for Jerusalem. Jerusalem's boundaries will be boundless. The angels were sent from the divine presence. And in reading the Pasuk, it said that Malach Acher Yotze Likroso, the Achrov Lo Nemar. It doesn't say that the second angel came following the first one. El Likroso, Zeba Mikan, Vezeba Mikan. And we turn back to our text and we'll see that in the Gemara. Achrov Lo Nemar. It doesn't say that the second angel came following the first angel. El Likroso. The second angel came opposite, from the other direction. Melamed Shechina b'chol mokom. The source of these angels is from the divine presence. So the divine presence is on one side, the divine presence is also on the other side, and from both sides the divine presence is sending the angels. So what do you see? That the divine presence is all over. The Af Rav Sheshes Ovar Shechina b'chol mokom. Rav Sheshes too holds that way. The Omer Lay Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes was unsighted, and he said Lishamei. He said to his servant that would help. We'll call him the seeing eye person that would help Rav Sheshes walk along. And Rav Sheshes would turn to his servant and said L'chol Ruchso Ukmon Labar Mimizrach. Help me stand up and position myself in any direction for davening, for prayer, except the east. Don't have me facing the east. V'lav mishum deles bei shechina. Not because the east is lacking the shechina. El mishum de moru ba mini. Rather, because the apostates and the heretics, they teach to bow toward the east. Just a technical point. Rav Sheshes was in Bovel. Bovel was east of maybe northeast of Eretz Yisrael, so that if Rav Sheshes wasn't precluding the possibility of facing Jerusalem, because to face Jerusalem for Rav Sheshes who was in Bovel, he would have to face west. He was saying the only direction not to be positioned was to face east, because of the custom of the apostates. V'Rebbe Avol, we continue in the Gemara, Omar Shechina B'Marov. This opinion would appear to be like Rav Shua ben Levi from before, that the Shechina is in the west. The Omar Rabbi Avol, my Uriah, Avir Ka. What is Uriah? Well, the word Uriah itself, Rashi has two approaches, but the first approach is that the western direction in Persian is called Uriah. So the Gemara is making reference to that Persian word, which means west, and doing an analysis of the word. If you look at that Persian word, it's made of two words, avir, which means literally the air, or the space, the direction of ka, of the Almighty. So the word in Persian for west indicates that that's where the Almighty concentrates his Shechina's divine presence. Omar of Yehuda, Omar Rav, my dichtiv yaroif kamator litfi. This is a pasuk from Parshas Hazinu, and it's going to be broken up into several parts, and each part of the pasuk is going to refer to a different one of the winds. So if you look ahead in the Gemara, in our marked Gemara, so you see underlining, those are the various sections of the Pasuk, and the trapezoid or volcano shape that you see highlights the respective directions. So you see first Ma'aravis, then Tzvainis, then Mizrachis, and then finally Dromis south. So the Pasuk says, Ya'arof Hamator Likfi. Zu Ruach Ma'aravis. This is a reference to the western wind, Shibah Me'arpoi shel olam. It comes from the rear, the back side of the world. We take a look at Rashi. Yarov kamotor lekhi. Moshe Rabbeinu dima es hatira la'arba ruchos. In the Torah in Parshas Hazinu, so Moshe Rabbeinu compares the Torah to the four directions of the world. Where is there room for comparing the Torah to the four winds? I said directions, but it's a reference specifically or to the winds. Kishem she'efshir b'lohem, just like the world cannot subsist without winds. Kach yefshir olam b'lohem, so to the world cannot continue without the Torah, without Torah study. The pasuk itself, if you want to look in Maseches Tainis, Daf Gimel Amud Beis, I should say Daf Ches, correction, Daf Zayin. I said Ches, meaning really Ches is 8. It's 8 lines from the top on Daf Zayin Amud Aleph and Tainis. There, the pasuk is explained Likhi Ein Lekach El Torah. So the pasuk describes the Yarov Kamator Likhi, the Torah is being referred to in the analogy. So why is the Torah, that the Torah is here, is compared to the western wind? Shebo me orpo shel olam. Rashi says me orpo shel olam is two pshatim. Ani shamati me chosko shel olam al shem shashchina b'maarav svirolei. One pshat is that it came from, comes from the strong direction, the being that the Shechina is, he holds, namely that Rabbi Yudah Marav holds that the Shechina is in the west. Vani omer me'achor shel olam shemarov kori ochor. The word means not the strong part. From Chosko Sholom, meaning like the first shot, but rather comes from the rear, the back side of the world, and the Marav is called Achor, it's called back side. Shinema, the pasuk says Hein Kenem Eheloch Ve'einenu Ve'achor Ve'lo Yovin. Kedem is clearly the east. And in contrast to that, you see the word Achor, which would be the west. And Achor means rear or back of the world. These are concepts, as we mentioned earlier, that are a bit, we'll say, mystical. And we speak about, you'll see the Gemara continues up to Amud Beis with matters of this nature. We continue with darshaning the pasuk Tizal Katalim Rosi Zu Ruach Tzvoinis Shemazeles Es Hazohav. This is a reference to the northern wind, and the word Tizal has to do with word Zol. Zol mean cheapening. What when the with regard to the northern wind, there is an association with the cheapening of gold. How is that to be understood? So Rashi says, Shemazelas is Azov, She Mechamemes Umavia Shrav, Viravon Ba, Vazov Zol. The northern wind is a wind that heats up the environs and brings, can bring famine as a result. And in famine, so people will offer a lot of gold for a piece of food. So every individual piece of gold itself has little value. That's the idea of cheapening of gold, and that's a result of a situation of famine. And that the situation of famine is associated with the northern wind. The Gemara continues: Kisir Malei Desha Zu Ruach Mizrachis Shemaseres Es Kol Olam Kesoyir. Rashi says, Kisoir, shade. Shade means a demon. The Gemara is describing the eastern wind as stormy. It's stormy like a demon. And Tosfos will point out that in the Mishnah we made reference to the eastern wind as being very calm and pleasant. Well, we already saw, Rashi sensitive to that, pointing out that that's all fine and good under normal circumstances. But if the Kodesh Baruch Hu wants to bring punishment and retribution to the world, he does so through the eastern wind, making it stormy, as we say, at times. We continue in the Gemara, Chiravivim, Alei Esef. Revivim is a term referring to rain. Zu ruach dremes shi mala revivim megadeles asovim. The southern wind brings in the rain, and through that there is growth of grasses. Tanya. And I'm going to repeat our disclaimer that we made before. We're going to see now a description of, we'll call it the world or whatever, but we're going to be limiting ourselves to a translation level explanation. What is really meant here, each one of you may want to research it further, and the answers may be found in the more mystical realm. Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Olam, we continue at the top of Amud Beis, Nachsadra Hu Doima. What's an Achsadra? An Achsadra, we've seen this earlier in the Masechta too, for our purposes it's a type of open room or sun porch which is enclosed on three sides and open on the fourth side. So totally open on one side. Therefore, the Reb Lezer is describing the world being like an Achsadra. It's enclosed on three sides, open on a fourth side. The ruach tzvainis eina mesoveves. Which side is open, is not mesoveves, is not enclosed with a mechitza, the northern side. And we're going to continue in this source making reference to the movement of the sun as well, the direction of the movement of the sun. The kevon shigia chamo etzel keren marovis tzvainis. When the sun in its passage through the heavens reaches the northwestern corner, nechfefes v'oyle lemalo min orakia, then veers up and above the rokia. Rashi says on the top line, lemalo min orakia umaleches es ruach tzafon begagish orakia. The sun moves on the roof of the northern side of the Rokia. We continue in the Gemara. Rabbi Yeshua Omer Olam Lekuba Hu Doime. The world is like a kuba. Kuba is an enclosed area. It means it's totally enclosed on all four sides. V'ruach tzvainis misoveves, the northern side is enclosed with a mechitza. V'kevan shechama magias l'keren ma'arovas dromis makefes v'chozeres achorei kipa. And when the sun reaches the northwestern corner, it goes around it and shenemar hoylech el dorom v'sovev el tzafon v'chulei. Hoylech el dorom, the sun, after rising in the east, it veers southerly, it veers into the southern hemisphere. That's bayom, that's during the day. V'sovev el tzafon, and it goes around the north, that's balayla. So the sun movement rises in the east, it travels through the southern half of the heavens, and when it sets in the west, it continues after that in a northerly path through the night. Sovev sovev holech horach v'al svivoisov shav horach. That part of the pasuk is elu p'nei mizrach p'nei marov. It's a reference to the eastern and western sides. Sometimes it goes around them and sometimes it travels through them. That's, of course, dependent on the season. In the summer days, so the course of the sun is a longer one than during the winter. Hu hoya oimer ason l'Rebbe Eliezer means Rabbi Yeshua would say that we're going to bring proof or strength to Rabbi Eliezer's position as opposed to Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Eliezer said that the world is like an achsadra; it's open on one side. Well, how does he do that? It's quite interesting, by the way, that the speaker here would be Rabbi Yeshua, and he is now saying something in defense of the opinion that disagreed with him, namely Rabbi Eliezer. The pasuk says, "Minachenu tovo sufa, zu ruach dromis." Mim zorim kara zu ruach tzfonis. And here we want to pause, take a look at Rashi, a couple of lines down from here and right across in the Rashi. Mim zorim kara zu ruach tzfonis. Shadayfen muzera suputza. The tzfonis, the northern side, was referred to here. The word mizorim, that word muzar, is a reference to something that is open. It's breached and open. That's the point of this section of the Brisa, where Rabbi Yeshua is saying, you see from this pasuk a support to Rabbi Eliezer that the northern side is open. Minishmas keil itain korach zu ruach marovis v'rochav mayim b'mutzok zu ruach mizrochis. And the final point mentioned here is that the Ruach Mizrachas, the eastern side, is Rochav Mayim B'Mutzak. That would mean water is stored or comes from there, from the eastern side. The Gemara asks, V'Hom Armar Ruach Droimis Ma'ale Revivim V'Gadelas Asavim. You can certainly use your arrow, which directs you back to Omid Aleph, where the Gemara pointed out that it's the southern wind that brings forth the rain. And here you're telling me Ruach Mizrachis brings forth the water. Lo kasha. There isn't any discrepancy. Hadasi b'macha b'nichusa ha b'shvichusa. Depends on the force of the rainfall. If it's b'nichusa, if it's coming in a pleasant form, then you can rest assured it's coming from the south. If it's coming in a forceful style, then that's the rain that's coming from the east. Omar Rav Chisda, my dichtiv mitzafon zov yeeseh zu ruach tzfonis shemazeles es hazov. The description of a wind causing the cheapening of gold. This is a point that we saw back on Omid Aleph. We have a little star to the side of the Gemara text, which enables you to see back on Omid Aleph a reference to the cheapening of gold. There, the Gemara made reference to Tizal Katalim Rosi, the northern wind causing gold to become cheap. Here, we see, in fact, the same thing. Ruach Tzfonis is Mazelis es Hazav. V'chein hu omer, we continue in our Gemara, and likewise it says, Hazolim Zohav Mikis. A reference, once again, to the cheapening of gold. So that from this pasuk you see the idea or the phenomenon of gold, which is associated with opulence and expense, is portrayed as something zal, cheap. The double underline marking that you see is explained on the side under the mivneh, where we've written the following: Rafron bar Papa Omar Rav Chisda. Those are the names we've highlighted. miyom, there's also a dashed underline which highlights the phrase miyom shecharav beis hamikdash. Shnei meimros beinyan gishamim. Two comments here that are associated with rain. Now the Gemara. Omar Afram bar Popa Rav Chisda miyom shecharav beis hamikdash, from the day of the destruction of the beis hamikdash lo hug shema ruach droimis. There was no rain coming from the south. Shenemar vayigzor al yamin v'ro'ev vayochal al smol v'lo soveu. We have one pasuk that says that there was a divine ruling al yamin, and that resulted in famine. And uksiv, there's another pasuk that says safon v'yamin ata barasam. From this pasuk, you see that the yamin is featured as a direction contrasted with tzafon. Tzafon being north. What's contrasted with north? South. And so from here, from this pasuk, we're able to see that the word yamin in the previous pasuk is responsible, say, for famine. And Yamin, as we saw in the second pasuk, is a reference to the south, the southern wind, the southern direction. V'yomar Rafram bar Popam Rav Chisda miyom shchor beis hamikdash ein hagshomim yordu me'otzer tov. Though rain falls, but it doesn't come from the otzer tov, from the good supply, the good treasury. Shenemar yiftach Hashem l'cho es oitzoro hatoiv. Rashi says es oitzoro hatoiv v'seifa, and the continuation of the pasuk says lo seis mitar tzucha. The opening of this oitzoro tov, this good treasury, results in rainfall. So Rafram is telling us that from the time of the Churban HaBayis, rain that we have doesn't come from this particular oitzoro tov. And the Gemara explains, Bizman Shisrael, and here we have a bit of a Girsa problem. On the one hand, the Bach takes out what we've put into the brackets and simply reads, Bizman Shisrael Shruyan Al Admoson. The Marsha maintains the Girsa of at a time that the Jewish people are Oisin Rishon Shemokom, they do his will. It means they fulfill the Torah. If you don't have that Girsa, then you have a much more, say, lenient attitude, whereby it simply says, Bizman Shisrael Shruyin Al Admoson. When the Jews are on their land, in the land of Israel, Yishomim Yordin Meyotzer Toiv. Bizman She'ein Yisrael Shruyin Al Admoson. In contrast, if the Jews are not on their land, so rain that falls will not come from the Oitzer Toiv. Omar Reb Yitzchok, Haroitze Shiachkim Yadrim, Shiashir Yatzpin. If one wants to achieve wisdom, so he should turn in his prayers southerly. If he wants to achieve wealth, northerly. V'simonech, in order to remember that wisdom is associated with the south and wealth with the north, remember the following. This simon, this memory device, is associated with the positioning of the vessels in the Beis HaMikdash. It says, Shulchan Batzofon, the table that contained the Lechem Aponim in the Beis HaMikdash was in the northern part of the Heichal. U'menorah Bedorom, and the menorah was in the southern part of the Heichal. How does that work as a simon? So if you look in the Rabbeinu Gershom, the third of the wide lines underneath, on the lower part, on the bottom of the page, Shulchan Batzafon, the third wide line, he says, Hainu Oisher. The table in the north, table is associated with wealth. Shiarich Shulchanu Machmas Asher, he's able to set up his table with all kinds of goodies on it because of wealth. So that the table is associated with wealth, and the table was also in the north. So in order to achieve wealth, the recommendation is to turn northerly. Menorah b'dorom, haynu chochma. The north is associated with wisdom. The kidichtiv, kiner mitzvah v'torah or. So in the Torah, Torah, we're talking about chochmas haTorah. Torah knowledge is associated with ner, and the ner is from the menorah, and the menorah we know is positioned in the south. We continue in the Gemara. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Omar liyolam yadrim. The recommendation is to always face southerly. Shemitoch she mishakem misasher. Through achieving wisdom, you'll also be able to achieve wealth. And it's through knowledge, through wisdom, that enables you to achieve wealth. Shenemar oirech yomim bimina b'smoila oisher v'chavod. We look together once again in the Rabbeinu Gershom. At the end of that third of the wide lines, Shenema Orech Yomim V'chulei Hai Kra Lo Osi Lashmin. This pasuk is its purpose is to tell us Elo the Torah Shichochma, the Torah that represents wisdom. Yesh Bo Nami Oishiv V'Chavod. So when you look at the pasuk, which is a pasuk describing the Torah, it says that there is within the Torah Osher and Kavod as well. The Gemara asks, V'har Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Omar Shechina b'Marav. We just had Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi early on, in the middle of Omer Aleph, where he said, Bo v'nachzik toiva. Let's express our gratitude toward the Anshei Knesset Gedolah, where they told us the direction of davening, namely facing the west. So how can Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi here say face south? So the Gemara answers the mitzadeid atzdudi, face primarily west, but southwest. That's atzdudi mitzadeid from where it's side, the side. Tilt yourself or twist yourself a bit southerly, so you're facing essentially a southwest direction. Omar le Ravi Chanina le Rav Ashi kagon atun di asvisu b'tzvein Eretz Yisrael. Once again, regarding direction for davening, Rav Chanina says, "You who are in the north is a reference to Bovel. You who live in Bovel, that's which is b'tzvein Eretz Yisrael." Adrumi, Adrimu, Adrumi, face south. So this approach, we'll call the Rabbi Chanina approach, is to face Eretz Yisrael. Uminolan de Bovel is from Eretz Yisrael Kaima. From where do we know that Bovel is to the north of Israel? Dechtiv mitzofel ti potach ra'o al kol yoishvei arz, from the north. The evil will break forth on all the dwellers of the land of Israel. So Bovel was to the north. We're going to see Mirza Hashem in the Tesis more discussion on these opinions regarding positioning for davening. We mentioned in our Mishnah Machikim Asamashim Nayerek, keeping the flax pool at a distance from vegetables, from the neighbor's vegetables. Tana, Rabbi Yossi Matir B'chardol. Rabbi Yossi, in contrast to the Tanakhama, says the chardol does not, if you want to cultivate chardol, you don't have to, you are not obligated to distance it from the bees. Shiyoch lo marlo, the owner of the chardol can say to the owner of the bees, Achato merli archeik chardloch min dvorai, until you tell me, remove your charnel from my bees. Archeik dvorcha min charnelai. I want you to keep your bees away from my charnel. Shabois vaichlus the glugay charnelai. That your bees come and consume the my charnel blossoms. So your bees are no less a source of danger or injury to me than I am to you. At this point, we go back to the Tosfos in on Daf Chof Hey Omer Aleph. We Mirtzah Hashem start with Tosfos Dimar Maschil Ein Oisin, and you'll notice that that is the second Tosfos on the Omid. This refers to the din in the Mishnah, the Bursaki, the tannery, referring to the text three lines from the top of Chof Hey Omed Aleph in the Gemara, the Mishnah that is in this case. Einos and Bursaki el Mizrach Hoyir. Why are we told to make the tannery to the east of the city? Mishum Durach Maravi Shukoshe Yarchik. The Yolich Horeach Min Hoir. If you position the tannery to the east of the city, so the wind coming from the west, it's blowing from the west, called the westerly wind, it's blowing from the west to the east. So it's a strong wind, and the tannery being beyond the eastern side of the city will benefit by having the wind coming out of the west, blowing toward the east, distancing the foul odor. Kidamrinon, and this phenomenon of the westerly wind blowing toward the east is explained in Maseches Brachos, where it says Hayoshen leMizrach Granoi, someone who sleeps to the east of his granary. Domoi Barosho. It's a very strong expression, meaning he is, without the literal translation, means he's responsible for his own sickness or his own death. So you have to imagine things in terms of directions. Here you've got someone sleeping toward the east of his granary. What's the problem? The western wind that's coming out of the west, blowing toward the east, and now you are east of the granary, so the debris from the granary, the kash, the straw, well, if you're sleeping, the wind can just blow the straw into your nose, into your nostrils, and a person can suffer the fate that results therefrom. So you see this idea of the, in the case of the tannery, the benefit of having the tannery to the east of the city, whereby the wind blowing out of the west toward the east will carry away the foul odor from the tannery being located east of the city. We continue with the Tosfos Dibur Masel Mipnei, referring to the Gemara 16 lines from the top. Mipnei Shehi Tadira. We saw a brisa that said, do not put the, you can put the tannery in all directions, Shitas Rabbi Akiva, in all directions except for the Marav, the west, Mipnei Shehi Tadira. Takes this as a technical point, Logar Sinan Mai Taima. You don't have that expression, which usually means what's the reason. You don't have my taimo in the text. Why? The min habraisa he. The expression my taimo is the Gemara asking a question on something stated, we'll say, in a Tanaic source. But being that mitnei shehi tadira is in the Tanaic source itself, there's no basis for having the girsa of Maitaima. If you look in the Tosefta, which is the source of the compilation of Brises, you'll see that Mipnei Shetadira is in that source. It's earlier, it predates the Gemara. So that when the Brises says, do not put the Bursaki in the west, you keep reading because it's Tadira, without any question being raised after the prohibition of putting west and asking my time or what's the reason. That would be appropriate if the source had ended with the word Marava. where you don't put it in the West at all. If the source ended there, and the expression Neshit Adir was coming from the Gemara, then it would have been appropriate to have my Taima and the Gemara answering Neshit Adir. But Neshit Adir being part of the Brisa, you don't have the my Taima expression. We continue with the next Taisus, Dibor Masl Utzva. This is a reference to the Gemara, 26 lines from the top. Utzva Shemaim L'chomish Tachavim. This was the based on the comment made of Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi that we express our gratitude to the Anshei Knesset Gedolah. They told us the Mokum HaTfila, and his approach was to say that it's the Mokum HaTfila is to face west, just like the Tzva Shemayim rises in the east and it's facing the west, bowing to the west where the Shechina is. Before we continue in the Tesis, we have a taktsir, a summary on the side, which reads as follows. Mikum Ashchina al pi aposuk Tzva Shemayim hino b'marov. The location of the divine presence, the Shechina, according to the Pasuk, was supposedly in the Shechina in the west. Ki baboker Hashemesh oyla b'mizrach u'mishtachave letzar she'mimul dahinu marov. Because in the morning, the sun rises, and you are imagining it as bowing toward the opposite direction. That's the west. Im kein, balayla Tosis shel, if that's the case, then at night, Tosis asks, Haim yesh lifnos lemizrach, me'achash shemesh shaka b'marov. At night, the last sighting of the sun was in the west. So that you would imagine that the sun at night is in the west, and it's at that point facing east. Does that mean that at night we should face the east, according to this? Another point, Loma lo loindim shchina b'marov mi beis hamikdash. Why don't we learn that shchina is in the west from the beis hamikdash? In the beis hamikdash, the one would enter from the east, walking in further into where the Kodesh HaKadoshim was. That was in the west. And the Kodesh HaKadoshim was the place where the Oron containing the Luchos was located. So one would associate then the west and the divine presence from the construction of the Beis HaMikdash. Now we look into the Tesis. Utzva Hashemayim L'chol Mishtachavim V'im Toimar Balayla Nami B'Mizrach Mishtachavim. Should we then conclude that at night the sun had set in the west, and it's at that point then bowing facing the east? Should we then face east at night? V'yesh Lomar D'ein Lonu Lumoid Elu Mimash Anu Royim. We don't learn from that which we don't see. In the morning, so we see the sun facing, coming from the east, facing the west. So we conclude that's the location of the Shechina, and that's the direction to daven in. What we don't see, that the nighttime and where the sun is at night, we don't draw any conclusions from that. V'im toimar v'amaylo neida mokim tfila mi beis hamikdash yoyseh sham Shechina b'marav. Why don't we know the direction of prayer, namely facing the west, from the Beis HaMikdash, where the Shechina was in the west? V'yesh lomar d'mishom ein lumod. We've used a triangle marking, and on this, under our structural note, we highlight the expression mishom ein lumod mi Beis HaMikdash. We have number one here, and the Ritzba a few lines later, number two. V'yesh lomar d'mishom ein lumod. We're not to learn from the Beis HaMikdash. The Avagav the Shechina b'chol makayim e efsher losim oron v'kaporas ela betzad echad. As far as the Beis HaMikdash is concerned, one could conclude that really the Shekhinah is in all locations. If you have to put the Aron and the Kapora somewhere, so you only have one place to put it, you can't put it in all directions. So that's out of default, the Aron and the Kapora was put in the west, but not because that's conclusive evidence of the Shekhinah being in the west. So simply on a physical level, you got to put it somewhere, so it's put in the west, but that's not conclusive proof that the Shekhinah is concentrated there. For Itzvo Omer, the Misham El Lomod, the Shekhinah B'Marov, not to learn from the Beis HaMikdash and the Kodesh HaKodeshim that the Shekhinah is specifically in the west, for the following reason, the Nehi, the Beis Kodshei HaKodeshim Hoya B'Marov HaMikdash. It's true that in the structure of the Beis HaMikdash, the Holy of Holies was at the western end, Mikol Makom. Nevertheless, Ha'arayin Shashchina Sham, the Holy Ark, which was the seat of the Divine Presence over there, Kilichti V'Nadichila Sham, as the Pasuk says, I will meet with you over there. That's a reference to the Orayin Hayah B'Mizrach Beis Kodesh HaKodeshim. It was in fact in the eastern half, the eastern side, the eastern half of the Holy of Holies. So even though the Holy of Holies was in the western end of the Beis HaMikdash, when you focus in to that, you'll notice that the Aron, which was the seat of the Shekhinah, so to speak, that was dafka in the eastern half of the Kodesh HaKodeshim. So we can't use that as our, we can't use the Beis HaMikdash as a source of concluding that the Shekhinah is in the west. We continue with the next Tosfos Dibur Ma'aseh L'Chol, referring to the Gemara 9 lines from the bottom. Rav Sheshes told his servant, L'Chol Ruchsa Ukman, position me in any of the directions, with the exception of the east, as we saw in the Gemara, because of the heretics and their practice to pray eastward. As we go through the Tosfos, you'll notice some markings, and we have a mivne, structural note, with the diamond featured. Man de omrim besugyasenu, diamond highlights the different opinions that we saw in our sugya b'inyan kivune tfila umakom shchina. So we'll be highlighting the different Amoraic opinions, and a double underline will highlight Bosis Betanoim Ludeos Ashonos Hanal, the foundation or the basis of the Amoraic opinions in Tanaic sources. So if you take a look at the Tosfos, you'll notice that the Kol Hani, the first line of the Tosfos himself, makes reference to the Amoroyim. Their names don't appear in the Tosfos per se, but we saw Rav Oshai and Rav Sheshes, possibly Rav Yitzchok on Amud Beis. They don't hold from the requirement of facing Jerusalem. They will hold like Rabbi Shmuel, so that you see the first diamond is associated with those Amoroyim that said L'chol Ruchsa can daven in any direction, and that's based on Rabbi Shmuel. The next diamond you see highlights the Mandomer that says Shekhinah is in the Marov. We saw Rabbi Yishu ben Levi, Rabbi Avol. They will go like the Tana, Rabbi Akiva. And finally you see Rabbi Hanina, who was on Omid Beis, eight lines in the eighth of the wide lines. He spoke about facing Eretz Yisrael. He holds like the Braisa, a Tanaic source that Tosfos quotes from Maseches Brachos. Now let's go into the text. Lo chol ruchsin ukman, kol hani amoroi, all of these amoroyim. From the context you can see it's a reference to those amoroyim that hold lo chol ruchsa. You can daven in any direction. The Shekhinah is b'chol mokoyim. those opinions, and we cited Rav Hoshaya and Rav Sheshes and possibly Rav Yitzchak on Omid Beis and on the fifth wide line, who spoke about if you want to achieve wisdom, face face the south. You want to achieve wealth, face the north. In other words, he gave you different options. You weren't restricted into which direction. So it would, he might go along with this school that holds l'chol ruchsa. Well, less lehu, they do not hold ha'desanya. They don't hold by the brisa. In other words, they don't rule. They don't paskin like the brisa bebrachas in Maseches Brachas shechayav odom lispalu neged Yerushalayim mishum dechtiv vispalu elecho derech artzom. There, the brisa says that one is obligated to face Jerusalem, as the pasuk there, as the pasuk would seem to indicate. Well, if they don't hold like that brisa, and we're dealing with Amoraim, so what Tanaic basis do they have? Ela Savri, Kerebi Yishmael the Omar, Shechina b'chol makom. We saw Rabbi Yishmael in our Gemara saying that Shechina was b'chol makom. The next opinion, Uman di Omar, Shechina b'marav. The opinion that holds that Shechina's b'marav, that was that included Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and Rabbi Avo, Sovar kerebi Akiva d'yomar mitnei shehi tadira. We saw that in the following the Brisa, the Gemara concluded after asking what does Tadira mean, it said Tadira b'shchina. Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi in our Gemara tried to bring proof from the Pasuk Utsvah Shamayim, but that wasn't conclusive as far as the Gemara was concerned, as far as proof of that position, of that opinion. But it doesn't mean that there, that the opinion doesn't exist. So Rabbi Akiva, in saying, don't set up a Bursiki in the west because it's a Dira, and the Gemara said, Tadira b'shchina. So that comes from Rabbi Akiva's opinion. Rabbi Chanina d'shmaitin, Rabbi Chanina of our Sugyup, he's on Chof Hei Amit Beis on the eighth wide line. The Yomar Kagon Atun the Yasvun Etzvein Dara the Israel Adrimo. Rabbi Chanina was saying, people like you that live in Bovel, in the north of Eretz Israel, so face south. So what was Rabbi Chanina's goal? Have them facing Eretz Israel. Savar Lo Kebraisa the Brachas. That opinion holds like the Brisa cited earlier in this Tesis. We continue with the next Tesis, Dibur Masl Uriya, a reference to the Gemara, six lines from the bottom. We pointed out that in Rashi, we made reference to the first, there were two Lishonas in Rashi. We focused on the first one, that Uri was a Persian word meaning west, and explain avir ka. So Tosfos says Loshon Shapirush Akuntris de Uriya Marov Nira le Rabbeinu Tam ulerach Iker. Namely, the first Loshon in Rashi, which said that Uriya is west, is the approach that the Rabbeinu Tam and the Rach feel is the main approach, as opposed to the second Loshon in Rashi. We didn't read it, but there is a second Lashon there. We continue with the next Tesis, Dibur Maschil Ruach, a reference to the Gemara five lines from the bottom, Ruach Marovis Shebo Miorpoi Shel Oilam. The Gemara was darshining the post of Yarov Kamotor Likhi. And Ya'arof or Po. Notice the similarity of the words. What does Mi or Po Shalom mean? Kidapirish Bakuntris me'achoy roi shel olam, from the back of the world. Demarov kori ochor, west is referred to by the term back. Dichtiv ochor v'kedem tzartani. That's a pasuk v'darshinim b'chagiga l'inyan mizrach u'marov. The pasuk says I was formed, man was formed, ochor v'kedem, and ochor v'kedem is in Maseches Chagiga associated with east and west. Uksiv nami. There's another pasuk in which you can see this idea of ochor being a reference to the west, and ochor means back or poshel olam. What there's another pasuk. Uksiv nami aram mikedem uplishtim me achor. And now Tosfos goes on with more, we'll say, directional descriptions. V'kori nami doroim yamin uletzafoin smoil. The dorom is described as to the right, and tzafon to the left. Now, if you position things like that, with the south being off to the right and the north being off to the left, so then you're describing a situation where you're facing east and your back is once again the west. So all of this complements the point Tosfos is making, that Ochor, you can see from various psukim, is a reference to the west. So he goes on to say, as we just read, the Korinami Doram Yamin Sofon Smol Kinaminim Bishmaitin, as we say in our sukya, Vahainu Mishum Deshchina Bemarov Upnei Hashchina Lemizrach. The divine presence is in the west, and it is thereby facing the east. L'kach kori marav achor u'mizrach kedem. And because of that phenomenon, the west is called back. So it's what I believe what Tosfos is. So we call this reading between the lines. Don't think that the fact that something is referred to as back is something denigrating or belittling. Quite the opposite. It's called ochor because that's where the divine presence was concentrated, and thereby, as we just said, he is thereby, the Shekhinah is thereby facing the east, and that's why the Marav, the west, is called back, and Mizrach kedem would mean like kodem, going in front, frontwards, and as such v'dorom yamin v'tzafon smol. And the result of this positioning is if your back is toward the south, is toward the west, and your face is toward the east, the south will be off to your right, and the north will be off to your left. Ulamadomar Shchina b'chol makoim, and according to that point of view, tzorch lomar dahai dekori mizrach kadam kedem umarov ochor v'dorom yamin v'tzafon smoil. How will that opinion, the Shekhinah's b'chomokom, deal with these scriptural directional descriptions? Mishum Shekhinah b'veis hamikdash, the reference to the west as being the back and the east as being front is because of the Shekhinah with regard to the Beis HaMikdash. Shehoya b'marav, in the Beis HaMikdash, it's there, as we indicated earlier, there, if you remember, we saw in the Ritzbo, the first teretz in Dibor HaMaschul Tzva Shemayim, in the Tosfos above, you can't learn from the Beis HaMikdash. He said there, even though the Shekhinah is in all places, and that's the Shita that we're dealing with right now in this Tosfos, the Aron had to be placed somewhere, so that the reference to the specific directions, that's a function of the Shechina in the Beis Hamikdash. Upnei Hashechina Klapa Yisrael. If the in the Kodesh HaKadoshim you have the Beis Hamikdash, it was facing east, facing the Jewish people that came into the Beis Hamikdash. Pnei Hashechina Klapa Yisrael Shoyu B'Mizrach U'Mishtachvim Sham. The Jewish community, in upon entrance to the Beis Hamikdash, the eastern end of the Beis Hamikdash, and would enter there and bow westward, bow facing the Shechina location in the Beis Hamikdash. But once again, this is working within the opinion that says Shechina is b'chol makom. I was simply tying this point into the Tosfos before, where though the Shechina is b'chol makom, when you're dealing with the Beis Hamikdash, so you have to choose one location, and that is what the various directional descriptions are referring to. We continue with the next Tosfos, Hagah. V'Rabbeinu Yitzchok Bar Yehuda Piresh D'Kishomad Odom Harishon K'Shenivra, when Odom was created, when he stood up, Hayu Ponov LeMizrach, he was facing east. And this is stated in the context of our discussion of facing east, and then back would be west. However, technically speaking, Tosfos doesn't like this. The ain near air. It doesn't appear that that's what happened. Shohaya orpo klapi hashchina lamadom hashchina b'marav. If you're saying this within the opinion that says Shechina was b'marav, it wouldn't appear appropriate that Adam Arishon would rise facing east with his back toward the Shechina. We continue with the next Tosfos, Dibur Masnu Ruach, a reference to the Gemara two lines from the bottom, Ruach Mizrachis Shemas Eres Kol Olam Kulo. This was from the Drosha Uchirevivim Ale Kisir Male Deshe. The Gemara said the word Sir Male Deshe is a reference to the eastern wind, that's Mas Eres is Kolom, because so you're like a demon. For Hode Mashmad Masisin Shehi Nocha Mikol Haruchos. In our Mishnah we saw, especially the Tanakhama said, the Bursiki is put to be positioned specifically to the east of the city. Because any winds coming from the east be very calm, and it wouldn't blow the bad odors into the city. So v'hadam mashem asisin she noicha mikol ruchos. In the Mishnah would appear that the Mizrachis was the most calm and pleasant of the winds. Hainuk shibo kedarka. That's when it blows in its normal way. Avok shibolu puranus he maseres kedapir shakunshis masisin. When it's coming as a form of retribution, when the Almighty decides to activate the punish. He will use the eastern wind in a very forceful fashion, and that's what the pasuk in Hazinu was referring to. We continue with the Tosfos at the top of Omid Beis. Dibur Amasu Umim Mizorim, a reference to the Gemara 13 lines from the top, Umim Mizorim Kara Zu Ruach Tzvoinis. But the Gemara brought in a brisa describing the world as either open on one side, like an achsadra, or entirely closed. The opinion that said it was open on one side, it was open on the northern side. And that's from the term, from the pasuk, Umi Mizarim Kara. That's a reference to the northern side. Pirush Kaisel Shela Mushlach. Its wall, when we spoke before about enclosure, its wall is cast down. That's the word Mizarim. Klomar She'ena Misaveves L'Rebbe Eliezer. According to Rabbi Eliezer, who said that the Olam is like an Afsadra, it's the northern side whose wall, whose enclosure is cast down. We continue with the next Tosfos, Dibur Maschil Uksiv. This is found at in the Gemara, the last of the narrow lines. Uksiv, Tzafon, V'yamin. The Tosfos here is going to explain what we explained as we were learning the Gemara. When you look at the end of the narrow lines, Raphram Bar Papa told us that from the time of Churban HaBayis, the rain did not come from the south. And the Gemara cited two psukim. The first was Vayigzar Yamin V'Roev V'Yochal V'Al Smol V'Lo Saveu. And the second pasuk was cited Tzafon V'Yamin Ato Borosam. So Tosfos says you need to have that second pasuk. Having just the pasuk of Vayigzur al Yomin V'Roev, true that you see famine, namely no rain from Yamin, but you don't see from that pasuk south. That's what you need the second pasuk for. So Tosfos says, the Vayigzur al Yamin, from that first pasuk, leka lahayfiach, you cannot prove from there that Yamin is the south, or you can't prove that Raphram's point that the rain after Churbanayis did not come forth from the south. Deikol lemeimar debiyamin usmoil shel odom mairi, that the pasuk says vayigzra yamin v'raev is a reference to the right side of a person, the left side of a person, but not a reference to directions of the world. The ode, Niret, on another point, the Hagah makes, I should have read, the ode, Niret, Shema, the Mimikra, Kamo, Elochiach, She, Dorom, Yamin, Velo no maripcha, could be from the just have, if you would have had just the first pasuk, even if you're not going to associate it with the right and left side of a person, who says that the right is south and left is north? It could be the opposite just as well if you had only that pasuk. At this point, we turn back to the Mishnah on the lower part of Chof Hei Amid Beis. Before we read the actual Mishnah here in the lower part of Chof Hei Amid Beis, we glance at the side under our Nosei, our topic heading, which states quite briefly, Harchokas Eitz Min Habor, the need for distancing a tree from a pit. The tree roots represent a source of potential ruination, destruction of a pit by penetrating either its walls or, we'll see later, by eroding its foundation. The Mishnah. Marchikin es ha'ilon min habor esrim v'chamesh amo. One is to keep a distance of 25 amos when planting a tree from the neighbor's pit. Ubuchorov uvishikma chamishim amo. And with regard to these kind of trees, chorov and shikma trees, which are large trees, Rashi says, shroshem rubim, their root system is extensive. there you need to maintain a distance of 50 amas. Bein milamalo, bein min hatzad. The term bein milamalo, Rashi says, she'echod mehem, whether it's a pit or a tree, milamalon, begova, shipuahar, vasheni, b'shipulo. Use, of course, the Pirush Chai book of illustrations for this and for the entire Masechta, as we've been suggesting all along the way. You just have to imagine a slope or a hill. And on the hill, there is a tree and there is a pit, one above the other, or one below the other. So these distances must be maintained on a slope, and likewise, minatzad means on flat ground. Im habor kotma, if a pit was dug first, and then someone planted the tree in an unlawful distance, too limited a distance. Then kotseitz venotzein domim. The tree is to be cut down. However, the owner of the tree does get compensation. Rashi says venotzein domim tekevon debrishus nota sheino mazik adzman godol lo chayvul hachomim lo kutz below domim b'shvil hazeko diyochid. Rashi says is something interesting here, that he planted it. In our explanation, we mentioned that he didn't maintain the necessary distance. That point needs to be looked into more. On the simple level, it would appear that Rashi is saying that the fact that it was not a case of immediate damage, so that's called birshus, even though, as we said, the tree was planted under the required minimum distancing, but the damage sets in only after a while, so the chachomim don't expect him to cut down his tree without receiving compensation. We continue in the Mishnah. Vim ilam kodam, if the tree was there before the pit, lo yokutz, there is no requirement of cutting down the tree. If the neighbor happened to dig his pit within that minimum amount of distancing. Sofek ze kodam, sofek ze kodam, lo yokutz. If there is a doubt which was there first, so there is no cutting down of the tree. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Afa Pisha Bor Kedemes Le'ilon, Lo Yokutz. Rabbi Yossi says, even if the pit was there first, namely, first the neighbor had a pit and then the tree man planted a tree within the minimum required distancing, he does not have to cut down his tree. Shezeh Choyfer B'Soch Shelo, V'Zeh Noteah B'Soch Shelo. You dug your pit in your domain, I planted a tree in my domain. And very simply, as far as Rabbi Yossi is concerned, if there's no immediate damage, if the issue of damage is something that sets in only after a while, that is not reason enough to require or to demand minimum distancing. Now the Gemara. Tono. Bein shabor lamato ve'ilon lamalo. Bein shabor lamalo ve'ilon lamato. This Bryson, we'll see this pointed out in Tosfos. Tosfos sharpens the point that even though the Mishnah made reference to the expression, the second line of the Mishnah, bein milamalo, it said bein minatzad. First of all, there's a question in terms of the gears of the Mishnah, but the Mishnah as we have it, you see just bein milamalo. In this source, you see, an elaboration of which is above and which is below, whether the pit is below and the tree is above, or the pit is above and the tree is below. So this brisa is much more thorough in the possibilities. So as far as the requirement to distancing in a slope situation, Bishlamo bor lemato v'ilon lemala. I can understand if the pit is lower down on the slope and the tree is planted higher up, the potential damage that the tree could wreak is obvious. Ko azlin shoshin maski lo lebor. The tree which is planted a bit higher up on the slope, the root system grows into the ground and can eventually penetrate the pit walls, the pit that's located lower on the slope. Elabor mi elabor lamala, the ilon lamata. But the second case where the pit is located higher up on the slope and the tree is planted lower down, amai, what's the reason for insisting on any distancing? Amar Rabbi Chago b'shem Rabbi Yosi. Rabbi Chago says if you don't maintain a minimum distance, it's true that the tree is lower down on the slope. However, the tree roots growing obviously underground. The tree roots, which machlidin, has to do with something that's subterranean, underneath the ground, like a hulda, is a kind of rodent that lives in burrows under the ground. It grows, the tree roots extend under the ground, and as such they'll grow and underneath the pit bottom and erode the pit bottom, weakening the pit bottom, and that's the damage that can follow in a case where the tree is in fact lower on the slope. So the minimum distancing is required, whether either one is the upper one and the other lower. Rabbi Yossi Yomer Afa Pisha Abor Kedemes LeIlon Lo Yakutz, even if the pit happened to be there first and the neighbor planted his tree within the less than the minimum distancing that the Tanakama referred to, the tree is not cut down. Lo Yakutz. Why? Shezechoy for Besol Shalov Azenotei Besol Shal. Each one does his own thing in his own property. As we go through the Gemara now, we have a topic heading on the side. Shitas Rabbi Yossi, we're going to be focusing on Rabbi Yossi. Al af she soiver de al hanizak laharchik es atzmo. Rabbi Yossi, in principle, says if you want to protect yourself from damage, if you perceive yourself as a potential victim, then you have to distance yourself. Moide, he will concede. Begiri di day, literally when it's your own arrows being shot. The al hamazik lehisrachek, that if the damage, as we said before, is immediate, like one shooting arrows, as opposed to a tree root growth, which happens over a period of time. Shooting of arrows is something that's immediate, but we're not limiting ourselves to shooting of arrows. We're talking about immediate or direct damage. I think that that's the term that needs to be emphasized, direct. If that is the case, so then the mazik must distance himself. There is a case that's featured, if I'm not mistaken, in the toward the end of Maseches Bava Metzia, of two neighbors, one in an upper floor, one in a lower floor, and a hole develops in the ground in the floor of the upper story. And when the upper guy is washing his hands, the water goes directly through the hole. As he is washing his hands through the hole and ruining the disturbing, ruining that which is below on the ground floor, in a case like that, the obligation to distance himself is upon the guy in the upper floor. Now we turn back to the Gemara. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Halacha k'Rav Yossi. The halacha follows Rav Yossi that means, and Rashi says this, Shalanizik lachik is atzmoy, the victim of damage is the one that has to remove himself, has to distance himself. Otherwise, as Rav Yossi says in the Mishnah, each one does his own thing in his own property. If you're bothered by that, so to speak, if you feel you're going to be a victim, so you have to distance yourself. Omar Rav Ashi. Ki havon be Rav Kahana hava amrinon. When Rav Ashi says that when we were studying in the Yeshiva of Kahana, we used to say, Moidi Rav Yossi Begiri Didei. Rav Yossi concedes that if it's direct damage, Giri are the arrow example, shooting of arrows, if it's direct damage that the mazik causes, direct, immediate damage, then the mazik, the perpetrator, he must distance himself. Rashi quotes that Gemara. In fact, I was hesitating before, but it's there at the end of Bava Metzia. Let's look at the Rashi together. Begiri delay, hecha demoti le hazeka mitoch yodav shel mazik, where the damage comes from within the hands of the aggressor, the instigator. Kiahi damrinan behabayis valdiya, as is said in the last parak of Bava Metzia, parak by the name of Habayis Valdiya. Hano betre chadai or iloi chadai or tatoi, two neighbors, one living above and one below. Ifchis maziva, the flooring material of the upper story fell in. The cholemas de moshi yode nafli ole de tatoi, and when the upper guy would wash his hands, the water would flow onto the lower guy. The kshenoiflin miyodoi mamish, when it flowed literally out of the upper guy's hands. Al hatachto onto the guy, al hatachto on the lower guy. Kori le giri delay. That's called his arrows. The chipaski vader nafli. If the water was paski means stopped or blocked, but we'll be more specific. If the washing of the hands was not, if he didn't wash his hands over that hole, but somewhere further in the room in that upper story, the Bach adds. Here, kegon de megandri. Megandri is an expression meaning it rolls along. The water would flow or roll along the floor. Lo kori le giri delay. That's not called direct damage. The water of the upper guy fell onto the floor somewhere further into the room and eventually rolls down, finds the hole and drips down onto the lower guy. That's not called giri delay. Let's continue in the Gemara. We have a marking, a bow tie shape, and on the side of the Gemara we indicate these. This highlights shnei meisim, or two incidents. Shema shutuf lahem, the common point between them, is ho'inyan de moidi Rav Yossi begiri delay. This idea of Rav Yossi and his conceding. In the case of direct damage, will be a common theme. However, the two cases you'll see are quite different from one another. The Gemara, Papi Yoino, it's a person's name. Oni Veheshir Hava, he was initially a poor individual and became wealthy. This person, Bona Apadno, he built a house. Padno is a large house. Hava Hanoch Atsuri Beshiva Vuse. There were sesame seed oil producers. Atsuri Rashi says, Otsuri Shumshamin Laasos Shemin. They were in the business of making sesame seed oil. And in order to do that, the Chihava Daiki Shumshami. When they would pound or crush the sesame, have a naido apadne, his house would shake. There would be a because of the impact that was the result of their oil making process. The repeat impact in their processing caused this house to tremble. Osla kame Ravashi. So the case came to Ravashi, Omale, and Ravashi said, Ki avon be Rav Kahana havaminon. When we were in the yeshiva Rav Kahana, we used to say, Moidi Rav Yossi begiri delay. So Ravashi, this is what we saw just before. Ravashi quoted that, and from here you see that Ravashi held those oil producers responsible Now, what do we mean responsible? Certainly, they would be obligated to distance themselves. As far as damage payment, right now in the Gemara, we don't see any issue of damage. We see potential damage. The trembling house could represent potential damage. The inability to continue living like that. But certainly the issue of the obligation of moving is upon them. And this is called, as far as Rav Ashi is concerned, Giri delay. As soon as they pounded away on the sesames, the house trembled. Direct, we'll call it direct damage. Ve'kamo, when we speak about the house trembling, to what extent? How much is trembling that, as and here Rashi says, I didn't emphasize this before in the text, but the boy Archuki, how much trembling must be manifest, transpire, before we can insist on their moving. We continue at the top of Daf Chof Vov. So the Gemara answers, Kidenayid Naksima Apume Dechatzva. Before translating, I want to point out that there's a discussion in the Tosfos concerning Rashi's Pshat. But first, we'll present Rashi's pshat by looking at the top. Kedenayed naksam apuma dechatzva shim yanichu kad. If you would take a kad, it's a type of vessel, a receptacle, like a pitcher, a jar, and if you would place this jar al choyma on the wall, on the top of this house wall, v'kisuya oleha, and the lid of the jar was upon the jar. A lid placed, simply placed, not screwed upon, but placed, laid down upon the jar. Yonua kisui machmas harodo. The lid would shake because of the shaking of the house that results from their oil making. So if that level of shaking is experienced, then they have to distance themselves. Another maisa, debay bar merion bray deroven ki have a naftsi kisna have asla raksu maski inshi. So this party called bay bar merion, when they would debay usually means the household. So when they would nafsi kisna. Nafsi kisna is to bang away at the flax to separate the debris from them. It's a process. I said bang away, but it could be combing it, but it's a process whereby the debris is separated from the kisna, from the flax. Flax is a reed plant from which you eventually will fashion linen, and in the linen making process you have to do this niputz of kisna. And when they were doing this process of niputz of kisna, the raksa, this is the debris, would go and maska inshi, and literally means injure people. So while they were doing this process of niputz of kisna, the debris would flow, would go in the wind and affect people. Also, the kamei d'Ravina. The case came to Ravina, Omar Lahu, and Ravina reacted. Ki amrinon moide Rav Yossi begiri delay. When we say that Rav Yossi acknowledges that the mazik has to distance himself, like in the case of shooting arrows, hani mili deko azlo mikocho. That's when the item that damages is hurled, travels as a result of the person's force. Hacha, in the case of the flax debris, Zikahu de Kamamti Law. It's the wind that causes the debris to become a source of damage. In other words, the process of Napsi Kisna does not involve the person, we'll say, hurling forth the debris. If there was no wind in the vicinity, if there was no wind in that location, the debris, as a result of this process of being Napsi Kisna, the debris would fall more or less right there on the spot. It wouldn't travel. So this raksa, third line, second word, that we'll call the debris, the raksa is a source of damage only because of the zika, the wind carrying it. And therefore, Rabbi Yossi would not require distancing. They would not have to distance themselves from the public. Maskif lo mar baravashi. We have a marking, the house marking, highlighting the expression maishno, and on the side we indicate these are kushios al ravino. Number one from Hilchas Shabbos, and number two from Nezikin, from other tort law. So we'll have two questions raised on Ravino's ruling of leniency on behalf of the Napsi Kisna. Mar Baravashi asks, Maishno Mizor V'ruch Mesayato. In Hilchis Shabbos, there is a Malocha, one of the 39 Ovos Malochas, is the process of Zoreh. Zoreh is where a person takes his threshed grains and hurls it upwards, and the wind blows, and in addition to your hurling it upwards, the wind blows and causes the lighter chaff to blow away from the heavier kernel, and that's forbidden to do on Shabbos. And if a person does that, so he's chayev. If he does it b'mezid, he's chayev misas based in. It's a very serious offense. So what does Mar Baravashi want to say? He wants to say, well, you see that in a case where the wind is a participant in the result, it's considered a serious matter. How can Ravina disregard the Napsi Kisna as being problematic because of the wind? Here you have the case of Zoreh, the Ruach Masayato, the wind is a contributing factor to culpability. That's the question that Mar Baravashi put to Ravina. We don't see Ravina responding. Amruah Kamei Demremar Amar Lohu. The case of the Napsi Kisna was presented to Mremar, and Mremar said, well, Hainu Zorev Ruach Masayato. Well, it's the same as the Melech Shabbos case, and they must distance themselves. So you have here Mar Baravashi and Mremar disagreeing with Ravina. Yet no response on the part of Ravina. The Gemara asks Ula Ravina. Here we pose another question to Ravina. Maishna mi getz hayotze mitachas apatish v'izik dechayev l'shalem. What's the difference between the case you ruled leniently, where you disregarded the wind factor, or I should say, because the only factor was the wind, the person in operating is exempt, doesn't have to distance himself. What about this case? This is a Mishnah in Bava Kamma, where a blacksmith is banging away on with his hammer on the anvil, and a spark flies forward. That's getz, is a spark. Ayotzi mitach zapatish, and that spark causes damage, the blacksmith must compensate. Well, the spark flew through the wind, and we see culpability. Rashi says, Chayav, he says, Vahare halichon haruach. The wind carried the spark. That doesn't diminish the blacksmith's responsibility. The Gemara, Ravina answers. Now here, as opposed to the question raised from Zoyev Ruach Mishayato, here Ravina does answer. He says, Hasam nichole delezel hachalo nichole delezel. In the case of the spark, he wants the spark to travel. He wants the spark to go away so that it doesn't set his house on fire. He wants it to travel afar. He's interested in it going, in its reaching that destination. And if there happens to be some victim over there, so he has to pay for that. He wanted it over there. Hacha, in the case of the Nafsi Kisna, he doesn't have any interest in the debris going away to any distance. The Rabbeinu Gershom, you can see he is opposite the point at which the Gemara lines get wide. I'm going to read the Rabbeinu Gershom. Aval hocha gabi raksa lo nichole de lezel. He's not happy with the traveling of the debris. Tu tzorich nami la raksa le tzorich shum dovar. Rabbeinu Gershom goes even further and says that the flax owner, he actually wants that debris. He is interested in the debris remaining by him. He needs it for something, for some purpose. He doesn't want it to go afar. Now, we emphasized the point that Ravina didn't feel obligated to respond to the Hilchos Shabbos question that was posed to him, but he did respond to the Nezikin question. We look at Rashi on the upper part of the narrow line, second narrow line, Ravino Maishnov Hule. This is a reference to the question, the second question, the second house marking. Bishlamo Zoyrev Ruach Masata Lo Haviole Pircha. As far as the Hilchos Shabbos question was posed to Ravino, that's not a challenge to Ravino. The Kosovar, he is of the opinion, Ravina is of the opinion, Mamonomi Sur Shabbos Lo Yalfinon. Rules regarding monetary affairs are not determined, are not concluded by rules concerning ritual law, like Hilchos Shabbos. The Hosam Leches Machsheves Osrotero. In Hilchos Shabbos, Meleches Machsheves, word Machsheves is associated with machshava, planned activities, we'll say intent. Intent plays a central role when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos. When it comes to laws of damage, tort law, intent is not a factor. It's the result that is a factor. So it doesn't matter whether you threw the ball and broke the neighbor's window with intent or without intent, you still have to pay. So the tort law is governed by a different standard than Shabbos Isur laws are governed. Therefore, you can't conclude one realm from the other. Now, at this point, we go back to the Tosfos on Chof Hayomid Beis, Dibur Maschil Tona. This is the third Tosfos on Chof Hayomid Beis. This refers to the Gemara 10 lines from the bottom of Chof Hayomid Beis. Specific Tona, Bein Shabor Lamala Vilo Lamata. And we pointed out when we were learning the Gemara that this brisa is more elaborate than the Mishnah. The Mishnah made reference to Bein Milamala. Itzdrich Le'asuye Hach. It was necessary for the Gemara to include this brisa in the discussion. Afagav de b'masisa nami tnan bein milamalon, and now take special note, bein milamaton. We don't have that girsa. We have just bein milamalon. But there happened to be another girsa that makes this, we'll say this issue even more profound. Namely, you have the Mishnah, according to this other version that says bein milamalon, bein milamaton. When the brisa said that, even so, we still need the brisa. Mikol makom, that means. Let me read the last few lines again. I was reading a little slowly. Itzrich l'siyach afagav masisin nami tnan bein milamalon bein milamaton mikol makom. De'i mi masnisin. Had I had just the Mishnah saying bein milamalon bein milamaton, regarding, of course, to the tree and the pit, have amino, I would have thought that phrase bein milamalon bein milamaton in the Mishnah, the achoruv v'shikma koi, it's restricted, it's limited to the case of the choruv and shikma trees, da lo koi. That's where it is positioned in the Mishnah. It's coming right off of the Mishnah's reference to these trees with especially large root systems. So had I had just the Mishnah, even with that girsa of bein milamalon bein milamaton, whether the tree is above or the tree is below, that's a reference or limited to chorv and shikma. Komashmalon brisa b'cholilon. The brisa is not limited to chorv and shikma. So from the brisa, I understand that the need for distancing a tree on a slope pertains to both cases, whether the tree is above, higher up on the slope than the pit, or lower down on the slope below the pit. Hago ulisforum de lo garsinon bimasnisin bein milamaton osi shapir. This, in fact, is a reference to our girsa. The Mishnah without bein milamaton, just with bein milamaton, then osi shapir means the need for the brisa then is more understandable. Deime masnisen, had I had just the Mishnah, hav amina bein milamalon, the Mishnah that says whether it is above, the Mishnah would read bein milamaton bein minatzat, like our Mishnah text has it. The phrase bein milamalon is going on the tree, a'ilon koi v'lo abor, is referring to the case of the tree above, where the tree is above the pit. There I understand where the nezek, where the damage, how the damage can ensue. If the tree above and the roots are subterranean, they'll eventually grow into the wall of the pit located lower down on the slope. And with that text of bein milamalon alone, mishum delo tikshi, so then I wouldn't have room for raising the Gemara's question that had been asked on the Braisa, wouldn't be a question that you would ask on the Mishnah, namely Elabar milamalo v'ilon milamato amai kidepara chabraisa. If the Mishnah as it is, namely with just bein lamatan, our gears of the Mishnah, bein milamalo and bein milatzad, the tree poses a problem as far as the Mishnah is concerned, only if the tree is above. We don't see a case in the Mishnah of tree being below, which would give rise to the question of how is there damage when the tree is below and the pit is above. Enochinami, when we present the brisa, that question can be raised because the brisa spells out that scenario of the pit being above. But the Mishnah as it is, with its phrase bein milamalon without Bein Milamata doesn't give rise to that question. Because just to repeat, with the Mishnah text as we have it, Bein Milamalon is the case, the need for dissing a tree, when the tree is higher up on the slope. The Mishnah doesn't entertain the case of the tree being lower down on the slope, which would have given rise to the question, why is there need for distancing in that case? So, just to summarize the last point, as far as Tosfos, the Haggah is concerned, the Mishnah text as we have it is smoother as far as any questions concerning tree location are concerned. However, the Brisa was quite necessary in light of the limited Girsa of our Mishnah, because as far as the limited Girsa of our Mishnah is concerned, one would think that the tree presents a need for distancing only when the tree is above, higher up on the slope. Thanks to the Brisa, we know that you must keep a distance from the pit even when the tree is lower on the slope. And of course that was clarified, but more why that also presents a problem. We continue with the next Tosfos, Dibur Maschil, Oni. This is a reference to the Gemara, three lines from the bottom, the story involving Papi Yoino. He was described as someone who was poor and became wealthy. And then you have the sesame oil producers that had been in that vicinity. And you'll see from the Tosfos that they were there all along. They were there before Papi Yoino came into the wealth, before he built his house. So Tosfos says, Oni Vesher Havit, Rabusa Nokat. There's a Chiddush that we're taught here. And actually, before we go on in the Tosfos, I would like to take advantage of the Taksir that we have on the side, the summary of this Tosfos. We've written the following. The Maisish of Papi Yoino Ve'atsuri Yesh Bo Chiddush. Oysom Atsuri, those oil producers, Igiu Lisham Papi Adayin Hoyoni, Papi was still poor. Velomit Supe Mehem Lachshoy Shulai Papi Yisasher V'yomin Ayomim V'yivna Padna. It's not expected of them to take into consideration that their neighbor Papi might become wealthy and build a house one day. Another point, Dinam, their halachic status is kisamach beheter. We discussed this extensively earlier in the Masechta. If you have two neighbors, and right now the first neighbor wants to put something on the border between the two properties, in a case where he's the first guy to show up, the other neighbor doesn't have anything there. If I want to, let's say, dig a pit, and we know there's a requirement of keeping two pits at a distance from one another, like the first mission of this parak mentioned, but if they're not coming to dig simultaneously and one guy takes the initiative and wants to dig a pit, that's called somach. He's building whatever it is. He's there beheter. So ubekach afilu begiri delay. Tosfos points out that when you are somach beheter, you appeared on the scene in a heter fashion, even if there is, as a result of subsequent events, you become a source of damage, even if it's a direct form of damage, like giri delay, einam tzrichim lazuz. They don't have to move, and there's precedent for that. Kimbo, b'kodmo refes es ha'oitzer, shel nachtemim v'shel tzaboyim la'oitzer. In a case, these are topics that we've discussed earlier. Cases involving a cow stall, or a bakery, or a dyer's operation that preceded a grain storage area located above a cow stall, above a bakery. So if you were there first, even though you are the source of damage, the cow stall or the bakery or the dyer operation represents a source of damage to the Otzer, but the Otzer came in second. They were there first. They don't have to move. Uvachonzois, Rav Ashi Pasak, and even so, in our Gemara, we saw that Rav Ashi ruled since they're causing the house to tremble, they have to move. Why should they have to move? They were there first. Well, Pirush Rabbeinu Tam, the lo kavir tashmish taihu shalatsuri kamo hadigmois deliyah. Rabbeinu Tam says that qualitatively, their presence is not as permanent a presence as the examples of the Refes Boker and the Chanish Nachtoimim that we mentioned before. So that you, if you add Rabbeinu Tam's Chiddush to this equation, you come out with the idea of Giri delay still being a factor, even if you were Somach Beheter, if you as the Giri delay are not there in a permanent setup. So we just have to imagine that these sesame seed oil producers are some type of it's an outdoor operation. It's not part of something that's set up in a permanent fashion. You could do it here, you could do it somewhere else, and therefore Rav Ashi insisted on their moving in the event that they caused a sufficient level of house trembling. Now, these points we will see in the Tosfos. The Tosfos, the Wamasa Oni Vashir Havi Rabusa Nokat, who was a Chidishir Shoya Oni, he was an Oni. He was poor when these oil producers came on the scene. Papi was still poor. Velo Iboya Lahu Lasukia Datayu. It's not expected of them, the Atsuri, the oil producers, to entertain in their minds this poor man will eventually build a palatial residence. Even so, even though they were not expected to take that into consideration, afilu hachi huzkeku laharchik, they were obligated to distance themselves mishum davu giri dilu, because they're classified as giri delay, their arrows. The afalgav de besomach beheter ein sof laharchik afilu begiri delay, even though if you were there first beheter, you're not expected to move, even if the damage you cause is giri delay kinesanya. And there's precedent for that. Imhoya Refes Boker Kademis Laotzar Mutter. If the Refes Boker is there before the grain storage facility located above, Vadin Chanishanach Toimim, Vishel Saboyim, likewise a bakery or a dyer shop that's there first, and eventually the neighbor opens up a grain storage area above, they don't have to move. Vein Chiluk Bein Dira Lishaar Lefi Hamaskona. There's no difference between whether it be a domicile or other things, according to the Maskona. Even with all of that in mind, nevertheless these Atsuri had to move. Omer Rabbeinu Tam, Dehocha Hainu Taimo. Here with the Atsuri. This is the reason that they have to move, to distance themselves. Mishum de lo kavia tashmishaihu kol kach ki hanoch de liel. Because their permanence is not as permanent as those examples mentioned before, the Refes Boker, the Chanishel Nachtoimim, and the Tzaboyin. The oid, the hocha shiny. And here it's different. Mishum de beisur somach. This Haggah is presenting an argument that is very different than before. And notice we have diamonds to highlight the stark contrast. Before, we described the Atsuri as Heter Somach. Here, the Atsuri are described as Be'isur Somach. Even without the house there, their presence is problematic. The Chomoro Mora Demachi, each pounding, Mora is the name of a utensil, a tool that they use in this pounding, crushing process. Mochi is the verb of pounding or hitting. Each bang that they make, marpi la'aro, the habidumyo debor, it weakens the ground, and it's like the case of digging a pit alongside the neighbor's property, where, according to this analysis, in contrast to what we said before, we spoke before, we mentioned the pit and on the border, we were speaking in general terms, but according to this analysis, even if there's no other pit in the vicinity, you don't have a right to dig a pit right up along the neighbor's border, because you are loosening the earth on the other side of the border. And this is the Esor. This is a reference to Esor of digging a pit right up on the neighbor's property, even if the neighbor doesn't have his own pit there yet. Each shovelful of dirt that you bang into the ground weakens the neighbor's earth. Likewise, over here, these Atsuri that were located right next to Poppy's property, even without Poppy having a house there, their banging is halachically problematic, and therefore, according to the Haggah, they are described as Be'isur Somach. We continue with the Tosfos on Chof Vav Amud Aleph. Dibar Masel Apuma. The Tosfos is referring to the first line of the Gemara, Apuma de Chatzva, and we have a taktsir. We have a taktsir note on the side. We will see here a machloikis, the ri and the ritzba. Im dochuk piusho shel rashi. In other words, the Bali Tosfos, or two Bali Tosfos, arguing whether or not to accept Rashi's explanation. B'mau har oda shi'chayev ha'atsuri lizrachik. What's the level, or how do you describe the level, or determine the level of shaking or trembling that would require the sesame oil makers to distance themselves? What did Rashi say? So Rashi spoke about placing a jar on the wall of the house, on the top of the wall of this house, with a lid upon the jar, and the lid would shake as a result of the oil maker's operation. So now let's look at our text. Maybe actually before that, this is some structural note. The crown shape that you see will highlight the expression Pirush HaKuntres, and the diamonds highlight the Re and the Ritzba. So what we're trying to do with our markings is show how the Re and the Ritzba, who appear in diamonds, relate to Rashi's Pshat, who we featured it with our crown marking. In the Gemara, we saw the expression Kidinayid Naxima Apuma Dekatzva. Al Pirush HaKuntres Kashya L'Ri. The Ri has a difficulty with Rashi's explanation. The Eich Yehei Hu Apadno Nayid Kulei Hai Ad shetisnad neid hanaksima. How could it be that the house is shaking so much that its trembling would result in a lid on a jar to shake? If that were the case, if the pounding away of the oil makers results in a trembling house, whereby a jar on the wall its lid would rattle. Dimkena bayis korov lipo. That's a case with a. That would be a case where the house is about to collapse. In other words, if the house was so weak, so flimsy that the lid on a jar on its wall would shake, that is a sign that the house itself is about to collapse. From the context, it would appear that when Poppy's house was not a flimsy, wasn't flimsy. Share mitocha oisher bona. He built it after coming into wealth. A man of wealth who's going to build a house isn't going to build some kind of flimsy structure. So it's a solid house. As far as the Re sees things in Masech HaShabbos, Dami Yomar Maya Apadno, in Masech HaShabbos, it deals with the etymology of that word, Apadno, and that is Apischo Din. Apadno is a contraction of Apischo Din. What does that mean? Sheme Asvin Shom Ledin, the place where cases are judged. It's a court. Mashma Debira Gedoylahi, it's implies that you're dealing with some type of large structure, large, solid structure. And as such, Rashi's description of a jar lid rattling as a result of sesame oil pounding is far-fetched. How, in other words, just to repeat, a jar lid would not rattle when set upon the top of a wall of a very solid, large structure, while sesame oil makers are crushing the sesames. Venire Lari, Dekad Naido Naxima. The Re explains, you'll notice that the wording of the Re seems to indicate that maybe he had a different girsa, because we have the expression kidenayed naksima, which is different than what the Re explains, and we'll go over this point in a little while. But first, what does the Re say? Kishe adam oiches hakad biyado. Imagine a person holding a jar in his hands, which is something much less than what Rashi described. Im kain misnadeid hoapadno chayov laharchik. And here, what the Re is doing is he's presenting an analogy or a comparison. If, like one who is holding a jar and it has a lid that rattles when the sesame makers are doing their thing, if the house would shake like that, so the expression here in the Re, where it says im kain, is like kemo, im kemo. If the house would shake, if the house shaking would reach that level of shaking, like the jar and its lid shakes in the vicinity of the oil producers, they would have to move. The difference between the Ri and the Rashi is, according to the Rashi, the expression in the Gemara "kidinayed naksima" is to be understood like "kasher," when that happens. When it happens that the lid on a jar would tremble while it's positioned on the top of the wall, in contrast to the Ri's approach, which is drawing a comparison, an analogy. According to the Ri, the Atsuri oil producers would have to move even when the house shakes a little bit, like the lid on a jar would shake when a person is holding it in the I'm assuming in the vicinity of the oil producers. So in simple terms, through the eyes of the Ri, the shaking level required for Rashi's case would be much greater than the shaking level that the Ri himself suggests. Uliritzba nira she'ein pirush akuntras dochuk. The Ritzba disagrees with the Ri and says that the Rashi's explanation is not so far-fetched. The bedavar muat misnad neid hanaksima shudavar kal afapi shuapadna eino misnad neid kolkach. Even if the house doesn't shake very much, the jar is a very lightweight thing with its lid on top, and even with a little bit of trembling of the house, the lid on the jar will tremble. So that what Rashi is suggesting is not as the Ri saw things, that you require a great amount of house trembling before a jar lid would rattle. Even with a little bit of house trembling, the jar lid will rattle. As far as jar lid rattling, of course, that represents the point at which the Atsuri must distance themselves. We continue with the next tesis, Dibur Maschil Zika, the wind. This refers to the Gemara, six lines from the top, and we were dealing with the flax linen producers, and debris that was emitted through that process. We saw that their niputs, since the debris, the raksa, was carried by the wind, Ravina did not consider it giri delay. They did not have to distance themselves. Before we get into the Tosfos, we have a taktzir / mivneh heading on the side. A crown shape will appear. The crown introduces hatsa'os, suggestions, the yesh lechayiv beniput hakisna benigud l'ravina, that we should impose restrictions on the flax producers based on other precedents that we find in halacha. Each one is introduced with a crown shape, and those precedents would seem to indicate that a stringency should be applied to the nafsikisna. Yesh litzayin. It's important to note the yesh shnei noisim beinyonenu. In this topic, there are really two issues. We mentioned them when we were learning the Gemara, but they'll become more prominent when we learn the Tosfos. And these two topics we point out. Kamoshe Tosfos Omer b'Dibur Maschil. Kamoshe Tosfos Omer b'Hedya
Lekamon Shura Shlishis B'Soif Aktsaros. You'll see three lines before the Tosfos lines get wide. The last of the three narrow lines. This the point will be made. And Ubetosfos Habo in the next Tosfos as well. Divar Maschil Mai. What are the two points? One, Chiyuv Tashlum, the need to compensate for damage. We're dealing with this flax debris. And number two, Chiyuv Harchoka, the need for distancing. V'zeh Kavonoso B'Shimush Ha, we'll see the use of triangles. Eish, when it comes to trying to parallel this case to the Nezik of Eish, in Yono Tashlum, there the issue becomes compensating for damage. Laharchik, we'll see a triangle highlighting the word Laharchik. That is Kimashmo, as it, the word implies. V'chein apiku etzu Rabbi Yosi Yosef v'orvim. Tosfos will cite a Gemara that we saw earlier in our Masechta with Rabbi Yosef, that is, having palm trees that were located near some blood letters, and Rav Yosef said, get the birds away from here. Afiku Urvi. That's an issue of distancing. We'll see another marking, a volcano shape, that we'll try to refer to its purpose shortly when we get into the Tosfos. So now, we'll start the Tosfos, and note, kind of early in the Tosfos, it's a rather long bracketed section. We'll initially skip the brackets. The purpose of the brackets is to, after seeing the question at the very opening of the Tosfos, to get immediately to the response. So let's start the Tosfos. Zika hu deka mamti law. This was the basis of Ravina's leniency toward the flax producers. The debris that they emitted was a source of damage only because of the wind. Kashyo Lari Delechayev Mishum Eish. In Masechet Bava Kama, particularly at the beginning of that Masechta, there are four key or principal forms of damage. And people make a very grave error when they learn the beginning of Bava Kama, and it's an error that really applies to practically all of Shas, of literal translation. When learning this section above the beginning of Bava Kama, it's demanded of the person, and the Gemara forces you to do so, to create principles describing the elements of the sources of damage featured there, and creating principles from them, so that when reference is made to Eish, which if you literally translate it is fire causes damage, it couldn't be further from the truth that's what Eish really means. But rather, you have to look at the characteristics of Eish in how damage results, and then say that other forms of damage can be classified under the heading Eish. So the Re says that the Raksa, the debris that causes damage after flying through the wind, is like the damage of Eish. If we skip the bracketed section, you see we get to the point in the text says Oymeri Delo Domi Le Eish. The Raksa, the debris, the flax debris is not like Eish, etc. and so forth. So we have question. Why not compare Raksa to Eish? Answer, it's not like Eish. But before we can get to the answer, this bracketed section is designed to describe what characteristics are common to Eish and Raksa in order for this suggestion to be made, in order for the Reed to raise this as a kasha, which would challenge Ravina's psak. Of course, the Reed then answers that really the Raksa is not like Eish. Now we go into the brackets, and here Tosfos tries to make the case 3 tries to make the case that Rakso is like Eish. Midi Dahave, Avdo, Vesakino Maso, Shnechem Barosh Gago, Venafel Baruch Matsuya Vazika Dechayev Misho Eish. In, for those who have learned Bava Kama, there's a source of damage or form of damage where a person places a rock, a knife, or a bundle at the edge of a roof, and the ruach mitzuya, in a normal wind, they fall groundwards and cause damage. The owner of those items has to compensate, and the compensation is based on the general topic heading damage of Eish. Kid Omar beperakama de bovakama. Namely, that Avno Sakino Maso, there's no fire there, but they're classified as Eish. And we're not, once again, we emphasize Eish is a concept. It's not literal, not to be translated literally. So, just like fire, you light it here and through the wind it travels and causes damage somewhere else, and one is chayav for that. So too, you put the package up at the edge of the roof, the normal wind blew, caused damage, you have to compensate. In our raksa, debris travel and causing damage, the amti le beruach mitzui airi. And here we have now a subtopic that we have to clarify. The flying of the debris in our sugya is also under normal wind circumstances. In order to make the case for it to be like Eish, a person is not held responsible unless the damage is under, say, normal wind velocity circumstances. Person is not held responsible for the unusual, for something that he did not have to anticipate whatsoever. Normal wind is something that one has to anticipate in lighting fires and putting packages at edges of at rooftop edges. So we have to make sure that in our sugya, the damage caused by the rocks was also under ruach mitzuya circumstances. And you'll notice we have a volcano shape, and on the side we indicate this. We highlight the word midaporach. Haychachos sheniputzakisna b'sugisenu misrachish b'ruach mitzuya. These are here Tosfos will be proving that the kisna spoken of in the raksa spoken of in our sugya is traveling through ruach mitzuya, normal mitzuya, also means common wind, normal wind velocity. How do I know that? Well, so Tosfos explains, midaporich alah, in our Gemara, 7 lines from the top, the Gemara asked on Ravino's ruling, mizoyre beruach mesayato, de'airi beruach mitzuya. The Hilchus Shabbos case of someone tossing the grains into the air and the wind assisting in the separation of the debris, that case of Zor Ruach Mesayo is talking about Ruach Mitzuya circumstances. And how do I know that? You notice we're creating a certain like chain of ideas. Raksa is compared to circumstance wise, compared to Zor Ruach Mesayo. And Zor Ruach Mesayo is compared to Kinmash Ba'akinis, as you learn in Bava Kam in the 6th parak, Gabi, there the Gemara raises a question, Gabi Liba Velipsoi Aruach. The Gemara there in Bava Kama quotes a brisa where it says, Liba Velipsoi Aruach, Im Yesh Velibuya Kedei Lelaboisa Chayav, Im Lav Potter. If the person is blowing on a fire, and that causes the fire to rage, what is the din if he blows and the wind also blows upon the fire? So the Gemara there says that if there was sufficient force in your own blowing without the wind intervening to have damage result, then you're chayav. But if not, if on your own, the fire would not have raged, but because you are being assisted with the with nature's wind, then and damage results, you're exempt. And the Gemara there asks, why? Why is that any different than the case of Zoyer v'Ruach Masayato? So in that case, you're dealing with the normal wind. And in the case of Libo v'Libso Ruach, where you're blowing and the wind blows, you're dealing with a normal force wind. And since in that sukya, Zohar Ruach Masato is quoted, it's presented there as a question, we see that that too is a normal course wind. Ooh, midaparach, and likewise, in our Gemara, 10 lines from the top, we asked on Ravino's psak from Migetz Hayotze Mitachas HaPatish, from the flying spark, Dehainu Beruach Metzuya, Dechayev Mishumesh. The flying spark is flying under normal velocity winds, and the Mishnah rules that damage that results from that flying spark is culpable as a form of Eish damage. The Gabi Eish Kotoni Law Bakaines in the sixth parak above a comma, the case of the Get Sayyid Taras Patish is taught in a section that deals with the general category of Eish. These are Getz is an example of Eish. And we said before that the Chiyuv of Eish arises only when you have a Ruach Metzuya. So in this bracketed section, we have established that the Raksa of the flying from the Kisna is flying in Ruach Metzuya, and as such it's a form of damage just like Eish. Omer v'omeri delo domi le'esh. It's not like Eish. We've included on the side a subtopic heading. We call it a tat. Tat means a subcategory. Tat tatsir, a summary of what we're going to see now. Let's read what we have on the side. Hari melame yisoid b'chiyuv Eish. The Ri will teach us a principle regarding the damage caused by that which we categorize as Eish. Fainu rak im ha'odom osa es ha'esh levado. Below siwa ha'ruach. Eish is considered a form of damage if it came to be as a result of human activity without wind intervention. So you have to have, in order for something to be chayav mishum eish, you have to have something that the person created on his own. V'achar kach hoylochas ayidei ruach, and then afterwards, the damage that you created was transported by wind. So we'll say a source of damage existed before the wind even started blowing. B'nigud l'nidon didan, in contrast to our case, the b'lih haruach ein shum nezek, without wind, flax, debris do not pose a source of damage whatsoever. Now, the Tosfos. V'yomiri, the lo domi li'esh, flax debris is not like esh. The ein chayev mishum esh, a person is not culpable for Eish damage unless it's something that the person made on his own. And a source of damage existed before the wind. The pasuk says, "Hamavir es habeira," you who lit the fire. Belosio ruach, the fire didn't come as a result of the wind blowing. You lit the fire. You created the fire. It was a zero velocity wind, and you lit the fire. V'achar kach hoileches al yedei ruach mitzuya. And then afterwards, that source of damage you created was then transported by a normal velocity wind. That causes a chiyuv in regard to Eish. Aval hocha, with regard to the flax combers, ein oise levadoi kol ikur elo al yedei horuach. He has done nothing that would be, that would constitute creating damage in the absence of wind. De'i lav ruach, if not for the wind, lo hava raksa azlo kol ikur, the debris would have not traveled at all. V'domi l'liba v'libsoi horuach de potter. The debris case would be similar to the case of someone blowing on a fire, and the and a natural wind was also present. In which we said that without the libui haruach, no damage would have resulted. In a case like that, there is exemption. V'hainu demeshani kiporach besomuch, and it is with that in mind that Ravina answers when the Gemara asks, "Maishnami gets." What's the difference between the rock saw case that you exonerate from the case of the flying spark? Davasalka daitoch the domi mamish legets. In the Gemara raising the question, the thinking is, it's the same thing, it's exactly the same thing as the spark case. Umeshani, and the Gemara answers, Ravina answers, Hosam by the gets, nicho le de lezo. He wants it, it's pleasing to him. He's desirous of the spark going, of flying. Umiskavein lahakos bekoyach hachietze, I guess. Veyisrachik beloshum zika. Vechayov mishum esh. Amashe goyme vahoylech hayadei ruach mitzuya. The blacksmith knows that sparks fly. He wants the spark to land far away from the interior of his house, so that his house doesn't go up in flames. So what does he do? He bangs with all his force, with all his strength in his blacksmith operation, so as to cause the spark to fly as far as possible without any wind. The wind blew also and just finished off the job, so to speak, of having the spark fly all the more further. The Mishnah holds him responsible. The main point, once again, is that in the spark flying case, he created the entire potential damage without the wind factor. It's true later the wind helped make the spark fly further, but even without that, the entire damage was created by the man. Avol hacha, but in the case of the flax combers, lo nicha le de tezel, that was the lashon of the Gemara. Chlomar, what does that mean? Lo nicha le, literally, it's not pleasing for him for it to travel. Chlomar, v'eino make b'koyach, in their, we'll say, beating of the flax to separate the debris, he's not going to beat it with extraordinary strength out of some interest for the debris to fly away. And you can add to that what we saw in the Rabbeinu Gershom, that in fact, if you accept Rabbeinu Gershom's shot, he's interested in the flax remaining in his immediate proximity because he needs it for something else. V'eino, let me read that again. V'eino klomar, v'eino make b'koyach, v'ilav oruach ein haraksa ileches klal. Without the wind, the raksa would have gone nowhere. So, just to repeat this last detail, in the raksa case, he's not beating it with force. In fact, if you add what we said, the Rabbeinu Gershom, he doesn't want it to go at any distance. The Gemara described the case where the debris caused damage. It's only because of the wind. And as a result, the Re tells us it's not similar to the case. It doesn't fall under the definition of Esh. And now we go on with a new suggestion. V'imtoimar mikol mokoim yehei chayav laharchik nidid avi agorah demasnisen. We should require flax beaters to distance themselves from people, similar to the requirement of distancing in the case of the granary. Afagav dezikol mamtile. In the case of the granary, grains are being threshed, and the Mishnah taught us that you have to keep a granary at a minimum distance from the city, because the debris from the granary, which will be carried by the wind, causes damage. So we see that damage that results as a result of wind carrying debris, that's enough to force distancing. So why don't we apply the Goren standard to the flax producers? V'yesh lomar demasnisen kirabonon. The very simple type answer, that is, that the Mishnah of Goren is authored by the Rabbanon. V'hochayri aliba de Rabbi Yossi. In our sugya, with our markings, we emphasize this a couple of times, that we were dealing with Shitas Rabbi Yossi, that says that al hanizak lahachik es asmo. And the issue is this considered giri delay, where Rabbi Yossi is mechayev? Our sugya was Rabbi Yossi focused, so that if you're going to show me a Mishnah that would require distancing, that's the Rabbanon. We're working within Shitas Rabbi Yossi. The Hochai Reliba de Rabbi Yossi, the Lo Mechayev, he doesn't force, he doesn't cause distancing. His Shita was, don't forget, Zachoifer Basel Shalom, Vazenotea Basel Shalom. You do on your property pit digging, and I do tree planting in my property. When does Rabbi Yossi say distancing is necessary? The Lo Mechayev, Lo Begiri, delay. He requires distancing only if something can be classified as giri delay. And as far as Ravina is concerned, this isn't called giri delay, because the only reason that Raksa causes damage is because of the wind. The ha de parech migets. Our Gemara did not hesitate, however, to ask from the Mishnah in Bava Kama. In our Gemara, you didn't see any push off by saying, the gets, the spark Mishnah in Bava Kama, that's according to the Rabbanon. Namely, the type of answer we just gave to dismiss Goren as being a Mechayev. Why wasn't that done with the Gemara's Kasha from the Mishnah of Getz? The answer to that is as follows. Because Mishum de lo pligi Rabbi Yossi v'Rabbanan linyan chiyuv tashlumin ela linyan archoka. The Mishnah involving Getz, the flying spark, was dealing with the obligation to pay. The obligation to pay for a resultant damage, that's not something that Rabbi Yossi takes issue with the Rabbanan on. They agree that if damage results, you have to pay. So the Getz Mishnah represents Rabbi Yossi as well. And that's why our Gemara could raise the Getz Mishnah as a kasha on Ravina. Where do Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbanan argue? Where we said by the Goren case, that's the Rabbanan, and Rabbi Yossi wouldn't subscribe to that. They argue regarding an initial requirement for forcing minimum distance regulations. So though Goren can be dismissed as a kasha, Getz cannot be dismissed in that way by relegating Getz to being a Mishnah authored only by the Rabbanan. Vim Toimar, my Shna, here we have another crown. This is a very abbreviated quote of a sugya that we saw not too long ago in our Masechta, of the requirement of, if the neighbor has a bird coop on his property, and there's a wall separating you and his property, you cannot set up a ladder within four amos of his bird coop because of the fear of the nemia, a carnivorous creature, rodent. And in with regard to that halacha, dafilu l'Rabbi Yosi marchikin, even according to Rabbi Yosi, you have to keep that ladder at a distance so as not to enable the nemia to get to his bird coop. Afagav dihi gufa mamti nafsha, even though it's not a case of giri delay, the animal is moving itself, is causing its own movement. So there you see Rabbi Yossi is very mindful of the need to keep a distance. Umiu Hossam, however, that's really not a strong question. As the Gemara itself said over there, Hossam Mishum de Zimnin de Bahadi de Monach Vechule Kidikomar Liel. There, the concern was that while I'm still holding the ladder, the creature will jump from the ladder toward upon the neighbor's bird coop. So there you have, in fact, something that is giri delay, and that's why there Rabbi Yossi is mindful of distancing. Aval kashe me'arvin de'liel. Yep, there's another sugya, the case of the birds. The Omer of Yosef, afikuli kurka mehocha. What was the case? We saw it very recently. Rabbi Yosef had some palm trees with palms growing on them, with dates growing on them, and within the vicinity of his palms, there were blood letters, and they were treating their patients, and the birds, ravens, kurkur they're called in the Gemara. These birds came and they enjoy a good drink, blood, and they also they settled upon Rav Yosef's trees. And what did Rav Yosef say there? And they ruined his dates. The Omer Rav Yosef, afiku li kurku mayocha, get these birds away from here. The concept of distancing. You notice we emphasized with our triangle marking before the various inyonim that are involved here. Here there's a need for distancing. So likewise, just like over there, keep the birds away. Let's keep these flax producers away. Keep them and their debris away. V'yesh lomar de Gemara lo sovar lo karavina. Here Tosis uses the term Gemara. I'd like to assume that means that Ravina, who that is that Rav Yosef, who was able to insist on getting those birds away, that approach, that the Gemara, here Tosis is called the Gemara approach. The Gemara does not hold by Ravina. Ravina was too lenient as far as the Gemara is concerned. The Rabbeinu Tam posek kemor baravashi ukeameimar. You'll notice mor baravashi and ameimar appearing 7 and 8 lines from the top. They wanted to mechayev, comparing the Raksa to the Zohar of Ruach Masayato. So that the Tisris, when he says Gemara lo sovel kravina, in, let's say, following the spirit of Rabbeinu Tam, holding like Mar Baravashi and Amemar, yeah, you gotta keep a distance. And therefore they disagree with Ravina. V'yoid oimeri. The Balei Chaim Shiny. This approach, it strikes me, is in contrast with what we just said. that, namely, that Rav Yosef and the birds and the need for distancing cannot be the basis for requiring distancing by the flax producers. Why? Because Balei Chayim Shaini, the Chamiri Tvei Miruach, the Koyach Achim Ruach Behen, Kidamino and the Bavakama. Balei Chayim, like the birds, animals, that's different. It's a more severe situation. The animals have their own internal locomotion. That's more severe than cases involving damage that results as a result of wind intervention. Damage that happens as a result of wind intervention is a less severe situation, and the Gemara Bava Kama describes that as Koyach Achim Ruben, and that's we did find that in the case of the Avno Sakino Maso Shenicha Barosh Gago. The package or the knife or rock that were left at the edge of the roof, they didn't do any damage per se. Only when the wind came and blew them off did damage result. And that is a category of damage that's less, we'll say, less chomor in the eyes of the Ri than Balei Chayim. As a separate topic, we're not going to delve into it in the context of the Shir, But a point that needs to be refined, and we made a little note on the side of the Tosis to this effect, that needs to be refined is still, what is the difference between the case of Hiniach Avna Sakina Maso Barosh Gagai, where you are culpable for resulting damage, and yet in the case of the Raksa Ravina was lenient. There is a nice footnote found in the Sefer Tosis HaMavor, that footnote number 443, those who have access to that Sefer, that delves into that topic. But for our purposes, the Re, in contrast to what was said just before, holds that you can't bring a raya from Rav Yosef and Apiku Likurkur to the case of the flax producers. We continue with the next Tosfos, Dibur HaMaschil Mai. This is a reference to the Gemara, seven lines from the top. Mai Shno Mizura Veruach Mesayato. This is a Kusha, the Kasha of Mar Baravashi on Ravina. Why are you lenient with regard to the flax producers where the damage happens with the intervention of the wind, and yet by Hilchos Shabbos we say Zayir Ruach Masayto is Chayev. Ravina, now here you'll see a point that was mentioned by Rashi as well. Ravina lo choshiv le lo pircha. The Savar Ravina doesn't hold this to be a challenge. The Savar kihechi delo gamrinon mishabbos inyan tashlumin. I mentioned Rashi only in the sense that Rashi also pointed out that Ravina didn't feel that this was a kasha coming from a different realm, coming from the realm of Shabbos. But here, Tosfos he doesn't use the same terminology of Rashi. He simply says that you, just like by Hilchos Shabbos, just like you don't learn laws of payment from Hilchos Shabbos, we'll come back to the bracketed section in a moment. Hachi nami lo gamrinon mehosom sheichayev laharchik. Notice we've continued our triangle marking, which is really a continuation of the use of the triangles before, the two topics involved in our sugya regarding the flax and the debris, the issue of compensation for damage that may result, and likewise the need for maintaining a distance. So Ravina says, just like we don't learn from Hilchos Shabbos regarding the need for payment, compensation. Now we'll go through the bracketed section. Kidemeforish Rav Ashi Balkaines, as Rav Ashi says in the sixth parak of Bava Kama, Degabi Shabbos, Malechas Machsheves Osro Torah. regard to Shabbos, and we emphasized this much earlier in our shiur today, with regard to Shabbos, Shabbos violation comes as a result of intent, intention, leches machsheves. That is the basis of Shabbos prohibition. Avlacha, Guramalu, here, the raksa, it caused damage, not directly from the person. The person was combing the flax. The wind blew and caused the debris to cause damage. That's causative. Groma benazik and potter. And when it comes to causative form damage as opposed to direct damage, maybe we call it the secondary strength damage, residual subsidiary damage, that is not something that a person needs to compensate for. It's also, but it's not allowed, but you don't have to pay. So Ravina holds, just like rules of payment are not derived from rules of Shabbos, Hachinami lo gamrinon meyosom she chayav laharchik. Likewise, I don't learn from the culpability of Shabbos that obligates me here to distance myself. Umar bravashi sovar. Mor bravashi, you did raise the question. Hold nihi dechiv tashlumin lo gamrinon. Granted, the requirement to compensate for damage, I don't learn from Shabbos. Minyanar choka, the lech shev giri delay, gamrinon shapir. But as far as the need to distance, by categorizing the debris and their carriage by the wind like giri delay, that I will learn from Hilchos Shabbos. Kevon de groma benezikon aser, for the very reason that Ravina held exemption for payment, namely groma benezikon is potter, for that very reason, Mar Bravashi says you have to distance yourself, because it's true that you can't force compensation. We don't impose compensation for groma, but it's aser to be a source of causative damage. Groma benezikin is prohibited. Huh? So just like groma benezikin is prohibited as a flax producer, you must distance yourself from the resultant damage, even if you happen to categorize it as groma benezikin. We continue with the next thesis. Dibra Maschil ve Ravina. This is a reference to the Gemara, 9 lines from the top. Ravina Maishna Migetz. We asked on Ravina, who was lenient with regard to the flax producers, what about the Mishnah in Bava Kamma and the flying spark where you have to pay? Vim Tomar Vamai Komar Viravina. Why does the Gemara place the whole weight of the question on Ravina? La Meimar Nami Tikshi Le'inyan Chiyuv Tashlumin Mai Shna Migetz. We heard before in the Gemara a Meimar saying regarding the flax debris, oh, Hainu Zore V'ruach Masayato. The thinking at this point is that that's only with regard to the need of distancing yourself. But there's no need to obligate, there's no need to compensate. So that not only Ravina is saying that we're lenient with regard to the flax producers, Amemar also truly required distancing, but the thinking is he didn't require need to compensate. Oh, he doesn't require need to compensate, but from the gets in Bava Kamma, you do have to compensate for the flying spark with the wind and the resultant damage. So Tosfos is asking, why does the Gemara, when it says V'ravina Maishno gets, it could have said V'ravina V'yameimar Maishno gets V'yesh Lomar, And Tosfos answers, Mishum Hachi Nokat Ravina. The reason that the Gemara focused and laid the whole burden upon Ravina and Ravina alone, the Ameimar Havimotzi Lidchuye, Ravimar could have pushed you off by saying, Dachinami Dechayev Lididei Betashlumin. When I compared the flax debris to the Zer of Rav Masayato, I wasn't comparing it just with regard to need for distancing, but I said, you also will have to pay. Dilagamri medamelo lezervu of Masayato. Hamemar, in making his comparison to zervu of Masayato, he was making it as a total comparison, not only with regard to the need for distancing, but lock, stock, and barrel, you got to pay too. Oh, well, then that conforms to the case of the gets, the flying spark, where there is also a need for compensating. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.